go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And so we come to the end of this broadcast week. It is the 23rd day of March, 2018. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live, courtesy of Brother Deacon Asa. And we are running straight, true, and hot on both streams, both HeadOn.live and WhiteRoseSociety.org. You can find us all over the place. We're downright eponymous. And if... I don't know. Has eponymous been used in talk radio today? Probably not. But it's been used now. But we're at Roku and Stitcher and TuneIn and FYINation.com and White Rose and HeadOn.live. Goodness gracious. If you can't find The Horn live broadcast, you aren't looking very hard. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Friday on the front porch. And so we'll get the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable fired up in fairly short order here in about, 57 minutes or so. Before we do that, however, a couple there's stuff we have to take care of at the very beginning of the program. Thanks go out to partial sponsors of the program this evening and monthly subscribers. Thanks very kindly to Stacy in PA. Yes, indeed. Thank you, Stacy. Thanks as well go out to... our longtime buddy Philip over in Maryland, and thanks as well to Joyce in Washington. Thanks as well to Catherine in Arizona, and as a result of Catherine jumping in late last night, I believe it was. Well, I can proudly say that our Friday on the Front Porch miracle amount has been reduced to only $460. We need to raise $460 to be done with fundraising for the month of March, and give us a solid week of fundraising free broadcasting next week. I'm really hoping we can do that so that I can just not even mention fundraising except for thanking the subscribers for the remainder of the month of March. Let's see. I have another thanks to send out. Yes, thank you very kindly to a brand new subscriber to the Patreon campaign. Thanks to Greg. Thank you very kindly, Greg, for jumping in there. Remember, if you'd like to be part of the Patreon campaign, it's real easy. You can go to headon.live and just click on the Patreon button and get signed up. And all those, it's real easy to keep up with. It all comes out on the first of the month. Whereas if you're a PayPal subscriber, it comes out on whatever day you sign up. Thank you, Greg. Thank you very, very kindly. Maybe some new stuff coming for the Patreon campaign in the fairly near future. Okay, so we've taken care of that again. We've got $460 to raise. That's 10 at 46 or 46 at 10 bucks a piece. You know, one at 460, two at 230. 4 at 115, oh God, here's where it gets painful. 8 at 5750. I'm not going any further than 8. It's too early for a headache. And besides, I got to confess, believe me, don't do that to people, Bob. That's just awful. I have to confess, the Mountaineer Sweet 16 game starts in about an hour and 35 minutes. But no way, you know, I'm not taking off for that because, among other things, even if I had, and I didn't want to do it because it would mean we'd be fundraising in the fundraising free week. But even if I had, I know that that would have been the kiss of death. I've been a Mountaineer fan for far, far, far too long. And so consequently, I knew that if I had done something silly like taking the night off to go and watch my beloved Mountaineers play Villanova, it probably would have been like 172-19 or something the wrong way. So I'll just sit here and pretend the game's not on, and we'll have our ordinary roundtable conversation, and maybe when it's all over, I'll look up and we'll be in the Elite Eight. That's the way I'm hoping the magic works. A note coming in from Ralphs. As a reminder, if the monthly goal is met, Ralphs will kick in $35 extra for the Trash Fits Walker Stand Challenge. That's a monthly progressive, in the truest sense of the word, challenge. So this month is $35, and if we raise that $460, boom, it actually becomes $495, which is a pretty big deal. Because we got one big ugly bill that comes due Sunday, and it's going to take just about everything we raise. So that is a big, important important challenge there. Thank you very kindly to Ralphs for making it. So remember, if we can raise $460, the Trash Fits Walker Stand Challenge will have been met, okay? And here's the other part of it. If we could raise that amount, well, I won't have to interrupt the extraordinary ordinary roundtable periodically through the course of this evening to make mention of fundraising. So maybe take that into account, because we've got we've got a lot more people who listen to the program than who contribute to keep it on the air. And that's okay. This program is designed to be accessible to anyone who wants it. Nobody ever gets a bill. And a lot of people cover a lot of ground for folks who may not be able to. And that is a noble, noble thing to do in this little broadcast effort that is not based upon capitalism or profiteering or Gulfstream Fives or even Maybachs. Okay, so that's where we are, 460 to go on the evening. And again, the PayPal button and the Patreon button are both at headon.live. Just scroll down a little bit, and they're both right there and easy to see. we're such a kind little community. I just got a note from Trey down in Kentucky, Stan. I'll keep you posted on the West Virginia game. I don't know if I want you to. Trey continues, I do have Nova beating West Virginia, but I'd love to see Hugs win. You know who I'd yes, obviously, but you know who I'd love to see this victory for, among others, but particularly for Javon Carter. What a workhorse. I mean, what a workhorse Javon Carter has been for 4 years. He was a three-star recruit and has just worked and worked and worked. He's been a defensive stud all 4 years, but he's also worked his way onto the offensive side of the ball. He provides stifling defense through the press that for which Bob Huggins is justifiably famous. But that wasn't enough, and he has worked and worked and worked for 4 years on his offensive game, and he is an absolute delight to watch play hoops. And if you could, I think if there were a lot more Javon, he's also an academic All-American. And if you had a whole bunch more Javon Carters, you'd probably have a lot less complaints about the nature of the college basketball game. But I'm not going to bore people with that. By the way, the other thing you can find at the headon.live website is, of course, access to the chat room. So if you click on that and you pick yourself out a screen name and a password, you will immediately be greeted by the likes of Anatole and Sailor Chick and VT Blom and the recently arrived Silent R. Lamar, and all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, nonetheless is not folding space this evening because he'll be busy in a little bit moderating the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable group. And a reminder on that, if you've never participated before and you'd like to, get on Skype and send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, on Skype, one word, and he'll show you the breadcrumb trail. Now that daylight savings time is upon us, the Bob signal is no longer effective against a sunny daylight sky, at least here in the Western Hemisphere. So that's pretty much all the business I think we have to attend to. And that leaves us with any number of directions we can take. I'd like to mention one thing, and probably one of very few, if not the only, mentioning it. But there was a quiet little announcement made in the last couple of days, and it's deeply disturbing to me because of the nature of some of the stuff that that I do. And that is this. It was quietly published in the last couple of days that the federally mandated, federally funded National Academy of Science review of the more than two dozen research papers peer-reviewed regarding the health effects, the negative health effects of mountaintop removal. Well, it's dead. It's as dead as a hillbilly-breathing mountaintop removal dust. Yeah. You may recall, because I've actually been to D.C. working on this issue, you may recall that back last year, with no justification whatsoever, the Trump administration, through Ryan Shrinky Zinky, shut down on the merest and thinnest and most preposterous of pretexts the aforementioned review. Because after holding a couple of town hall meetings and after having reviewed the studies and had outside reviews of the studies conducted, it looked pretty clear that there was going to be a finding that while more research is needed, that there is a clear linkage between the toxic blasting dust that comes off mountaintop removal sites and is then breathed by people below said sites, and a sickening panoply of death and disease. And so, even though the National Academy of Sciences, actually the National Academy of Science, Engineering, and Medicine, even though they went begging for more money with which to finish the study, the money was not forthcoming. And according to an article written over at the Charleston Gazette-Mail by Kate Mishkin a couple of days ago, the NASEM finally gave up. Rhea Andwala, who is a spokeswoman for the National Academies, said, "We need the funding to keep the committee going with its work, and also without the funding and additional guidance from the department when the review will be completed, didn't seem feasible to keep this going." So who cares, certainly not the Trump administration, about poisoned hillbillies? That story struck me like a punch in the gut. For a variety of reasons, the most obvious of which is just how damn dirty it was to take money that was already spent and declare that somehow or another the Trump administration had the right to stifle science. Desperately needed, valid science. And just to give you a sense of how extraordinarily unusual this was, Paul Locke, who is the chairman of the study, I've met him, noted that he sat on at least seven other committees. He chaired one of those seven. And in all his experience, he has never seen a situation like this one. He also noted that the committee was about halfway done with its work. He told the Gazette, "I'm disappointed that we as a committee couldn't contribute because I think we really could have produced a report that could have been useful." Well, see, the thing is, the report would have been useful, Dr. Locke. It would have been useful in pointing out that for decades now, the health and well-being of people in Appalachia has been sacrificed deliberately and intentionally for the corporate profits and the personal well-being and wealth of people like, oh, West Virginia Republican senatorial candidate Don Blankenship, and for Kevin Crutchfield over at Alpha Natural Resources, and all the other executive class who got retention bonuses when those companies went bankrupt, even though their workers found themselves completely screwed into the floor. But there's other blame to go around. We're talking about something on the order of $475,000, which in governmental terms is chump change. And as I've watched this, I couldn't help but think about the Beyond Coal campaign that is literally sitting on something like a tenth of $1 billion and could have simply written a check to finish this study, the Sierra Club, and never even felt it. And actually gone a long way toward fulfilling their mission of trying to move this country, you know, the name of the campaign, beyond coal. I mentioned it. I don't know if anybody asked. But I also know that I know that people in those organizations pay attention to things like this. And you got to wonder, if it occurred to a simple hillbilly like me, how did it not occur to them? How could they sit there and just watch this thing die? Well, kind of the same way that they've sat for a couple of decades and just watched hillbillies die. But don't forget to send in your contribution now, because if you contribute to the Sierra Club, you can get yourself a canvas messenger bag, just like the one that John Muir carried into Hetch Hatchie over 100 years ago, only this one will be made by some little 9-year-old chained to a sewing machine table in China, and it'll fall apart in the rain. And by all means, save the last gray wolf. If I sound bitter, it's only because I am. But I hope you'll pardon me my bitterness. And understand, I ain't giving up. None of us are that have been pouring heart and soul into this thing for well over a decade, sometimes two and more. Not by a long shot. And in point of fact, I can tell you that there is a great likelihood that in the second week of April, I'll have to be away from the microphone. In the second week of April, I'll be with a colleague heading to Washington, D.C. in hopes of seeing new legislation introduced. So that's, like I said, we're not giving up. But we also recognize we have an uphill climb. There's no getting around it. But we've got to keep plugging. We've got to keep trying. And the work is admittedly harder on the Senate side than it is in the House side. No, I realize maybe you'd like for me to be talking about the existential nuclear threat that we face from John Bolton. We'll get to it. I have a feeling we'll probably be talking about that on the roundtable. Maybe we can talk about Geezer Disgustus and another one of his seamy, sordid, adulterous, fornicatory. Is that a word, fornicatory? Because if it isn't, it should be. Sexual escapades. We can do that too. So, yeah, that. And hopefully we'll be successful. But like I said, the work is harder on the Senate side. The AIC Act has been in the House of Representatives since 2012. It's 2018 now. Not one of the so-called progressive heroes of the Senate, not Elizabeth Warren, not Sherrod Brown, not Bernie, not one has ever had the courage to introduce that bill in the Senate. And we have worked for all we have worked, for all we've been worth, for all we've been able to do on that. Kirsten Gillibrand of New York, such a progressive hero, nothing. Barbara Boxer, while she was in the Senate, bupkis. Jeff Merkley, who was elected on an environmental platform by the good people of Oregon, nothing. Markey in Massachusetts, The number one climate change awareness, climate change, not an advocate of climate change, you know what I'm trying to say. Sheldon Whitehouse in Rhode Island, Jack Reed, Angus King, And you can forget about it with any Republicans. Joe Manchin. He's why none of the Democrats will actually do anything, because they're afraid it might hurt Joe's tender fifis. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted you to know that's because we've talked a lot about it over the course of the last couple of years. You know, that study, that review, was triggered when a bunch of us went down to the public health authority, a man by the name of Dr. Rahul Gupta, and met with him and said, "Look, we got to have some relief. We deserve to at least know if this science is real. We deserve to know if people really are being poisoned and killed for the profits of coal companies in this state." And bless his heart, he agreed. And so his then boss, the governor of West Virginia, Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, GERT, asked the federal government to pony up some bucks for the review. And toward the end of the Obama administration, they granted a whole $1 million to find out if the hillbillies were being poisoned. And then eventually, with the arrival of the carotene Caligula, it was all just disappeared. It was taken out behind the woodshed and whooped with an axe handle. So I wanted you to be aware of that. Thank you very kindly to Roberto. Thank you, Roberto, for taking us down to 430 to go. And we've got a challenge on the table, courtesy of Reggie from Arkansas. Reggie says, I'll kick in 10 bucks. 20 bucks if the Mountaineers win. Looking for others to match my offer. So there's the, I guess we could say that Reggie has initiated the Let's Go Mountaineers challenge for this Friday on the front porch. Thank you, Reggie. Charlene says that she'll knock down 200 of it. Wow, thank you, Charlene. So that would take us down to 230 to go. So between Reggie and Charlene, if anybody wants to match that, we're done. And that, and we'd actually be done before before the end of the filibobster. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you, Reggie. And thank you, Roberto. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. So what else? Hey, you remember a couple of nights ago I told you about a guy in Kentucky Stan by the name of Carl B. Nett? Carl B. Catch Him With a Butterfly Nett? And how he responded to Representative John Yarmuth, a member of the House of Representatives from Kentucky, who proudly wears his F button to show his F rating from the National Rifle Association. Mm-hmm. And he tweeted, move that button over, I was trained center mass. You know, because your gun humpers like to use gun humping terms like center mass. Yeah, he said he'd like to assassinate a sitting member of Congress. But, of course, that sitting member of Congress is only a Democrat, so nobody went down and arrested Carl B. Catch Him With a Butterfly Nett. Well, it's not the same if you are a Republican congressman. Today, Virginia police went down and arrested a man in Virginia Beach by the name of Wallace Grove Godwin. Wallace Grove Godwin is a 69-year-old fella. And apparently, you never know, maybe he was liquored up or maybe, let's see, anytime somebody threatens gun violence or does gun violence, they're all crazy, right? Right, yeah? Well, the Virginia police weren't buying, so they went down and arrested Wallace Grove Godwin, age 69, because they said that he went to the local office of representing Scott Taylor, who, being a Republican, is important and worthy of the application of federal laws against threatening members of Congress, unlike Representative Yarmuth. Because it is alleged that Wallace Grove Godwin, 69, during a heated discussion, said, Scott's having an event. Now, remember, this is Republican representing Scott Taylor, who, again, is important enough to have the federal law applied in his behalf. Scott's having an event this Saturday. I'm going to get my shotgun and do something about this. I'll just handle this myself. And then talking to the staff member in the local office said, and you two are next. Now, he didn't have a gun with him. He said he had a shotgun, you know, just like Carl B. Catch Him With a Butterfly Nett said, I was trained. And, you know, I'd say Carl B. Catch Him With a Butterfly Nett's threat was actually more significant. Because as Carl B. Catch Him With a Butterfly Nett said, he's a former Secret Service officer, you know, who had previously bragged about bailing out on protecting Barack Obama because, as he said, I'm not a bullet sponge for just anybody. I'd say his threat was more credible, though, because he's a former Secret Service officer and a former CIA guy and has had the training to, as he confessed, shoot center mass. In other words, make sure that who he shoots, he kills. Meanwhile, Mr. Godwin didn't have his shotgun with him and had certainly not been trained to shoot center mass like Carl B. Ketchum with a butterfly net had. But the authorities acted on Godwin's threat of some future action. And now he's charged with threatening murder and assault on a U.S. official and could face up to 10 years in prison if convicted. Proving that, well, all members of Congress are equal, but some members of Congress are more equal than other members of Congress. Just thought you'd like to know that that was out there. And since I did mention John Bolton, oh, wait, I've got an announcement. Or, well, I've got a couple of notes to deal with here. Steve in New York, a member of the Fraternity of Steve, said, how much was Reggie's challenge, by the way? Hasn't March Madness been awesome? It's been the best I've seen in years. And it got better last night because Kentucky lost. Sorry, Trey. Sorry, Dennis. Sorry, guys. Sorry, Ms. Judd. I know you were there. Sorry. But not liking Kentucky is an old and honorable tradition among Mountaineer fans, going all the way back to when Jerry West and the Mountaineers went down to the Kentucky Classic or whatever it was called, when Adolph Rupp was, good old racist Adolph Rupp was coaching Kentucky. I think, it was either Jerry West or Hot Rod Hundley or, you know, one of those greats from back in the late 50s, early 60s Mountaineer squads. And they went down and they just manhandled Kentucky. You know, one of those awe-inspiring Kentucky squads that Rupp was constantly fielding. And whoever it was, whether it was West or Hot Rod Hundley or another one of those guys, Rupp went up to him after the game and growled at him and said, you beat old Uncle Adolph, and after you'd beat him, you just kept beating him some more. And West Virginia was never invited to the Kentucky Tip-Off Classic again. So at least we come by it honest. But no, it's March Madness. This tournament has been fan-freaking-tastic. And bless Loyola Chicago's heart. How do you not love Cinderella? Unless, like, you know, you're a Nevada fan or whatever. Gonzaga, that beat West Virginia last year, got dispatched by Florida State. And so tonight would make things perfect if my beloved Mountaineers could dispatch number one seeded Villanova. It's going to be a long, hard climb for them, for the Mountaineers, though, because Villanova, man, they shoot the three. They shoot the three, without a doubt. But anyway, Steve says, how much was Reggie's challenge? It's $10 and $20 if the Mountaineers win. So that's where that stands. Meanwhile, a note from Silent R. Lamar. Silent R. Lamar says, if you can get the rest of it, which means, it's 2:30. If you can get 100 of the last 200 needed before 5 p.m. Pacific time. Let's see, that's 5 p.m., that's 8 p.m., 8 p.m. Eastern, which means an hour and a half from now. If we can finish off 100, that's actually $130, or 120. Anyway, we knocked down $100 of the last 200 needed. Silent R. Lamar says he'll finish it all off and we'll be done. So, and we'd still have an hour of program to go, so that's well worth the mention. And holy cow, thanks so much to Charlene and to Silent R. Lamar. Now, back to John Bolton for a minute. You know, last night I had the story that included the audio of him at the behest of a guy named Alexander Torshin, who is also known as Putin's banker, delivering a y'all need a bunch of guns speech celebrating the anniversary of the laughable Russian Constitution. Well, this evening, an account of something that Bolton did back in the 90s. Now, remember, back during Vietnam, John Bolton was very much in favor of Vietnam and us being in Vietnam. And he was so in favor of it that he got himself a spot in the National Guard and then went to law school. Boy, I tell you what. And then he protected whatever law school it was from the vicious incursions of the Viet Cong. But later on, you know, he had positions in government. This goes back to the into the 1990s. It is an account submitted by a woman by the name of Melody Townsell of Dallas, Texas. I see no reason not to believe this. You can find it over at dailycoast.com. It's headlined, Horrifying Personal John Bolton Story. And it is by someone of the name Amy in Dallas. And she says, my best friend since college, Melody Townsell, was stationed in Kyrgyzstan on a U.S. aid project. During her stay there, she became embroiled in a controversy in which the oh-so-diplomatic John Bolton was a key player. She described the incident in a letter to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee members, who have thus far responded with a yawn, and I wanted to share it with a larger audience. Now, this post goes back to April the 15th, 2005, when nobody wanted to pay attention to anything having to do with Bolton because, of course, that was the reign of error. And John Bolton, as one of the primary architects of the disaster that was the Iraq War. But this 2005 post is worth going back and maybe even circulating a bit more, so maybe some current members of the Senate, there's no confirmation process here, but at least boosting the awareness of this escapade might help people to understand what a really miserable, lousy, horrible, terrible excuse for a member of the human race John Bolton, did I call him Michael earlier? John Bolton is. And if you go and you find it at Daily Coast, this is just a little tiny sample of what's in the letter. And the whole thing is just, wow. Mr. Bolton proceeded to chase me through the halls of a Russian hotel, throwing things at me, shoving threatening letters under my door, and generally behaving like a madman. She continues, as a maligned whistleblower, I've learned firsthand the lengths Mr. Bolton will go to accomplish any goal he sets for himself. Truth flew out the window. Decency flew out the window. In his bid to smear me and promote the interests of his client, he went straight for the low road and stayed there. John Bolton put me through hell, and he did everything he could to intimidate, malign, and threaten not just me, but anybody unwilling to go along with his version of events. His behavior back in 1994 wasn't just unforgivable, it was pathological. Maybe just remind folks that this exists. might be helpful. I mean, just maybe. Yeah, maybe. Okay, we've made real progress. In response to Silent R. Lamar's challenge, well, Labor Man, our buddy Gary, just stepped up and said, "I've got it for Lamar," saying, "Okay, Lamar, pony up time." Signed, Labor Man. Thanks, Labor Man, and thanks, Silent R. Lamar. And that leaves a grand whopping total of, I think, $30. And that's amazing. That is truly stunning. No, $20. Thank you to VT Blom in the chat room. $20 to go. If the Mountaineers win, we're done. If the Mountaineers lose, we got $10 to go. Meanwhile, a note coming in from Arthur. Now, Bob. Again, hewing very, very close to the line of gimmick infringement, but that's not Bob, and we're strict constructionists around here. Now, Bob, being sued by the Viet Cong is no joke. You apologize to Mr. Bolton and shake hands. Not with your hand, Arthur. Not with your hand. Well, it might see. Okay. Okay, that's a half a cowbell for Arthur. And a half a cowbell for Scott and Punky. Scott pointing out, John Pornstash Bolton attended Yale Law School in New Haven, Connecticut, and let the record reflect that not a single Viet Cong got past Waterbury. Oh, but the Battle of Waterbury, that was one for the H's. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Philip points out, Trump is literally surrounding himself with people who are just as sick and depraved as he is. The White House is turning into a frat house. That's an insult to frat houses, quite frankly. I lived in one for several years, and we weren't anywhere near as awful as this White House. But what is being said is that what we're seeing is the construction of a war cabinet. And that is a sobering. Thing to ponder. Yeah, what else? Let's see. Well, there's plenty. But look, it's about 17, 16 and change minutes before 7. And the beginning of the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. And we might as well, look, from time to time I ruin somebody's dinner somewhere, so let's... I mention this, look, it feels kind of salacious to talk about all this adulterous fornicatory, by God, I'm using it, adulterous fornicatory behavior on the part of the Nectarine Nero. And I remember how annoying it was back during the 90s, during the great cleanest hunt, to constantly be beset with stories of cigars and stained blue dresses. But you know what? In none of those stories was there ever a story of anybody actually having, and I'm not defending, I'm just talking about the bare fact. These were all stories about oral sex. there was no actual, you know, with the old Saturday Night Live bit with whoever it was that played Dr. Ruth Westheimer, who would start out in the bit with her hands shoulder width apart, but slowly but surely an index finger and a thumb and index finger together forming a hole would get closer and closer and closer. And the gag was that she would have to be stopped before there was full penetration of the index finger into the other bit, right? And it was funny. But, you know, coitus. There was no coitus anywhere in the whole great Clinton cleanest hunt. On the other hand, what we're finding out now, as if it was a surprise, is that a serial adulterer and committer of fornicatory acts... God, that's a great word. Committed lots more adulterous and fornicatory acts. Surprise! But there's a weird pathology involved, and this gets a little bit more reverse Oedipal with every fornicatory account. You recall in the Stormy Daniels account that we had the particulars that involved, oh God, at the tender age of maybe what, 57, 58 years old, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, his adipose flesh glistening with sweat, grunting and rolling off of Stormy Daniels and saying, "You were great. You remind me of my daughter Ivanka." To which anybody who's, you know, not a Trump and not a Trumpanzee, not a maggot, sort of responded by going, "Oh, yuck, oh, ooh," and your skin crawls and you hear banjo music and shit like that. Well, last night, another of the women with whom Donald Trump got all fornicatory and adulterous, a woman by the name of Karen McDougal, a former Playmate of the Year from the late 90s, ...1998 to be specific, went on the CNN to talk to Anderson Vanderbilt Cooper and tell Anderson all about her love affair. Boy, I know where we're going with this bumper. Now, there's a couple of different possibilities. Completely different genres. See, I knew, Steve pointing out, oh, dear, Bob. By the way, all members of the fraternity of Steve now have proprietary rights to use oh, dear, Bob. Oh, dear, Bob, the image of Baron Harkonnen floating through the air in the movie Dune just went through my head. Oh, you're beautiful, pustulant evil, my Baron. Ooh, that's a full-body shudder. Ack. Darlene in Connecticut pointing out, during the Monica Lewinsky, subject line, sex addiction, during the Monica Lewinsky scandal, wasn't there constant talk of how Clinton might have a sex addiction? Funny how that's not being mentioned in regards to Trump at all. Well, you know, it's funny the way it's funny that the 24-year-old Christian white boy who bombed the bejesus out of Austin is described as challenged and thoughtful and troubled and from a close-knit Christian family, whereas a black kid who's a victim of murder is described as having smoked marijuana. It's funny that way, isn't it? But anyway, so Karen McDougal went on CNN, talked to Anderson Vanderbilt Cooper, and told him all about her love affair. Really torn for the bumper with this. And at one point in time, well, Anderson went there, and she simply said, yes, yes. At one point in time, he told me, I know all there is to... No, no more singing. He told her, you remind me of my daughter Ivanka. We have a president of the United States who can't even commit adultery without thinking about having sex with his own daughter. Whew! Jesus, and the hillbillies get shit for incest. Wonder why there haven't been any press releases from the National Mining Association about the risk of consanguinity with a Q. The risk of consanguinity in the Trump family. Dear God, that's two now. Are we eventually going to find out that every woman that he stooped, he compared to Ivanka? Is that where we're going? Is that just how sick and twisted this guy is? I mean, I got daughters. And I can proudly say that, well, I mean, it just, no, you don't say it proudly. It's just normal. You don't, oh my God. As Sam Rockwell, as Guy Fleegman in Galaxy Quest said when the alien lady's tentacles came out and started patting Tony Shalhoub on the back of the head, and he said, oh, that's just wrong. Karen McDougal, the magazine's 1998 Playmate of the Year, told CNN that she was racked with guilt about Trump cheating on his wife, especially when he showed her the couple's Trump Tower penthouse apartment when Melanoma was not home. That just puts a little stab in your heart, McDougal told anchor Anderson Cooper. I couldn't wait to get out of the apartment, actually. I'll bet you couldn't. But, you know. Then he offered to pay her, and she said, I'm not that kind of girl. And then they carried on the story I'm looking at from the Los Angeles Times by Michael Finnegan merely says, but they grew to love one another and wound up seeing each other at least 5 times a month, until she broke up with him in April 2007, according to McDougal. He loved her because she wasn't charging him. So we've got that going on. All of which just creeped the CNN panel on Don Lemon's program right the hell out.
Chairman Dugal got emotional in her interview with Anderson Cooper tonight. We're back now with CNN political commentators Tara Setmeyer and Alice Stewart and CNN legal analyst Laura Coates. So, Alice, here's another similarity from McDougal's interview, which sounded a lot like something we heard from Stormy Daniels. Watch this.
Did he ever compare you to any of his kids?
You know, he's very proud of Ivanka, as he should be. I mean, she's a brilliant woman. She's beautiful. She's...
Yeah, I don't think it's a pride thing. I mean, there was that time when she was a teenager and they took a photograph together on a piece of, like, concrete sculpture somewhere in Florida, maybe at that tacky pile of bricks he owns, and there's a concrete sculpture of two parrots fucking, for Christ's sakes. Oh, dear.
You know, that's his daughter, and he should be proud of her. He said I was beautiful like her, and, you know, you're a smart girl, and... There wasn't a lot of comparing, but there was some, yeah. I heard a lot about her. Yeah.
So does that strike you as a bit weird?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, he said some other things about Ivanka that a lot of fathers wouldn't say about their daughters. But they have a close relationship. They are been through a lot together, and this is nothing new. But for McDougal to go on there and try to ingratiate herself with the American public with that mm-hmm. she meant so much to him. I just very little sympathy for her.
I just have to listen. I know it's this is so creepy.
By the way, that was a Republican strategist, in case you were wondering.
What he said about his daughter. Yeah. I mean, he made comments about her on Howard Stern that were pretty disgusting, very sexual in nature. He said that, you know, about how talking about her chest size and about how she's a 10. And I mean, that's just creepy.
Well, didn't he say on The View if I would be dating my daughter?
Yes, he said that. If she wasn't his daughter, he would date her. I mean, I don't know any father that would make comments like that, even if their daughters were supermodels. It's creepy and disgusting.
There's another comparison, but I won't make it because I think it is a bit weird here. So let's talk about how this affects the First Lady. The First Lady Melania Trump, for the first time in a while, she actually put out a photo of herself and the president today, okay? How do you think she's doing with all of this? I mean, Laura, this isn't a legal issue, but, you know, you can relate.
Well.
Yeah, well, that's now we're into the speculation, except, God, I can remember the 90s when... you couldn't turn on the radio without some white winger Republican, whatever, saying, "My friends, I don't understand why Hillary Clinton won't divorce that scumbag. Here, give me another handful of pills. Ah, she's disgusting. I keep my wife in a pit, and I'm on marriage number two or three. I can't remember which, my friends. But with half my brain tied behind my back, I know that if Hillary should, well, she should divorce that scumbag right now, and then we'll destroy her when she runs for president. And if it takes 25 years, we'll probably have a bunch of little lefties going, yeah, we agree, because after 25 years, you know, you can get stuff to stick, my friends, inside the body politic. Mega dittos to everybody. The walls, they're breathing a little bit. Yeah. Disgusting, 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 disgusting. Yeah, meanwhile, note coming in from Darlene in Connecticut. Subject line, incest. You have to draw the conclusion that he committed incest with Ivanka. My friend, who is a retired psychotherapist, said there definitely was an incestuous relationship. Oh, dear God, are we talking about the end of Chinatown? She's my daughter and my sister! You know, Faye Dunaway, the whole thing. Wait a minute. It's only a sentence fragment, but it's getting a cowbell. Clarity noting, even if my daughter was a hot nun. Meanwhile, Billable Rick, and maybe we'll talk about this here in a couple of minutes. You know what? We're going to save this, and we'll talk about this for a couple of minutes. Hey, by the way, Billable Rick has put a challenge on the table. I'll kick in $10 if Kansas loses and another $10 if Villanova also loses. Or if we're short at the end of the show, I'll kick in what's needed to end the fundraising. Okay. I'm going to root for the former and not the latter. I'm going to root for 10 bucks for Kansas losing and 10 bucks for Villanova losing. That's what I, but it may not be over by then. The game, the Villanova WVU game starts at like 7:40 on TBS and may well be going on at 9 p.m. Eastern time. All times Eastern, by the way, 7:40 Eastern, 4:40 Pacific. So I've got, oh, I know which one. There were several possibilities, but I know how. I've used it before. It's too good not to use it again. It's not quite as upbeat as what the other choice would have been. If y'all want to guess by email what the other choice was, you're more than welcome to. But it's time to go to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. And so we'll take a little break while I get that set up. This is Friday on the Front Porch. I'm so sorry. This is Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be back.
Sitting in a tiny table in a ritzy restaurant.
Beverly Hills Hotel.
She was staring at her coffee cup. He was trying to keep his courage up by applying booze. Talk was small and they talked at all. They both knew what they wanted. There was no need to talk about it. They were old enough to scope it out and keep it loose. She said, "You don't look like my type, but I guess you'll do." Third-rate romance, low-rent rendezvous. He said, "I'll even tell you that I love you if you want me to."
Didn't have to pay her. The not paying part is maybe kind of what made him think of Ivanka.
And they left the bar, they got in his car, and they drove away. He drove to the family inn. She didn't even have to pretend she didn't know what for. Then he went to the desk and made his request while she waited outside. And he came back with the key. And she said, "Give it to me and I'll unlock the door." Kept saying, "I've never really done this kind of thing before. Have you?"
And he said, "Lots of times."
Third rate romance, low rent rendezvous. And he said, "Yes, I have, but only a time or two." Third rate romance, low rent rendezvous.
You know what? It's a true mark of the songwriter's art when you're writing a song like that and you have a line that ends with before, and you resist the urge to make it rhyme with something really obvious. Just a second. But that, of course, was the amazing Rhythm Aces. Muscle Shoals music. Third-rate romance. Low-rent rendezvous. And yes, I am pleased to announce, courtesy of the research department this evening, being V.T. Blom, fornicatory, noun describing actions related to fornication and participating fornicators. So, yay me for coming up with a really groovy word. It is time to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Again, a reminder, if you'd like to be part of the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y, Sparky Dunk, D-U-N-C, one word. And we'll get you into the festivities. Yeah, I agree with Sailor Chick in the chat room. Trump described Ivanka as a nice piece of ass. Listen to his Howard Stern appearances. How do you do that? I got nothing. I can't for the life of me. You can say of your daughters, as I have said of mine, that they are lovely and brilliant. You can watch them welcome children into the world. But how in... No. Just, no. 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 Just not. So, for some reason or another, we're having a couple of issues with the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. We'll have that up and running in a moment or so, I hope. And just a couple of other things that we may have missed along the way might not sneak into the conversation this evening. You know how the geezer disgust us administration has been ballyhooing having gutted regulations, job killing regulations, right? Well, yesterday, pursuant to recording by NBC Dallas-Fort Worth, folks in Hood County, Texas were surprised by what was described as a big kaboom. A big kaboom. Well, what happened was Trichem Industry in Crescent, Texas, about 20 miles southwest of Fort Worth, blew up. They make things like soap and acid, not the good kind. That from Crescent Mayor Bob Cornett. Jesse Bailey, who works next door to the plant, told NBC, "Things were blowing out of the roof like metal lids on buckets. It smells like sulfur." There were at least two explosions, two big kabooms, and the Texas Department of Public Safety had to close the highway in Hood, part of the highway in Hood County, in Crescent. firefighters who showed up were then evacuated because it was believed and feared that there would be another explosion. Another chemical plant nearby, as well as a lumber yard, were evacuated. And officials decided that they would let the fire burn itself out, because, you know, there ain't nothing in all that stuff. It's a burning there. It's going to hurt nobody. Mm-hmm. And because the goddess of irony is really into her job, it all happened before a court hearing that was scheduled today for a decision by the Trump regime to delay what's called the chemical disaster rule. It would have been an update to a 1990s era regulatory scheme designed to make sure people, you know, like in We the People, were better protected from industrial disasters. And also, as Think Progress notes, follows on the heels of the Trump regime trying to utterly get rid of the Chemical Safety Board of the United States. That's the outfit that investigates things like chemical fires and explosions and leaks and dumping 10,000 plus gallons of methylchlorohexane methanol into the drinking water supply of 9 counties and about 300,000 people. Mm-hmm. How did it happen? Crescent Mayor Cornett said that the investigators told him they thought the fire started after a feller dragged his foot along the floor of the plant while chemicals was being mixed. And the worker, he caught fire from the waist up. They airlifted him out with critical burn injuries to Parkland Memorial Hospital in Dallas. His mother-in-law said he'd only started working at the place 3 weeks ago, and I reckon they hadn't had time, because, you know, we don't want none of them job-killing regulations. They hadn't had time yet to teach him how not to get caught far. I am not making light. So, and I wanted to make sure that we got that in there. Because, of course, Texas is a wonderland of deregulation. Almost level West by Cole Trump Jr. Stand to shame. All right, let's go and check in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Hey, Sparky, do I have you?
Okay, we got the issues worked out, I guess. You're just not showing online to me. That's all I was trying to say.
Well, when I checked, I had disconnected. We were connected all through the song and everything. We were all ready to go, and then gone. And I never touched anything.
Oh, well, I wasn't even here when the song began.
Right, so neither of us touched anything. Internet magic.
Okay.
It makes no sense to me. I show, and I just want to make sure, I only show three folks in on the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Is that the same number you show?
Well, yeah.
Okay, because I had seen Steve earlier. I didn't know if he was popped in or popped out.
I hadn't heard from him. I can try ringing him again. I had him in the group earlier, but I didn't know whether he was there or not.
I didn't either, so, you know. Then again, this is all above my pay grade anyway, so I don't know from beans.
Well, it's really simple.
Oh, I'm sure it is, but I haven't been doing it for years and years and years like you have. So, you know, things that are really simple are simple to people who have simply been doing them for a while.
I guess.
Yeah.
I think you got that that new super duper version of Skype too.
When we went through all the bullshit, I had to roll back to a non super duper version.
Oh, okay. Because I keep telling them I don't want it. They keep trying to.
Oh, you don't. You don't. I saw it for about 15 seconds, and it was like staring into a communications abyss. So, you know. Well, anyway, the Billable Rick had an observation a few minutes ago, and I thought we'd get started with that rather than me just reading his email. Are you there, Rick?
Yeah. Hey, Bob. How are you?
I'm just, well, you know, it's a great day to be a West Virginian.
There you go. It's always a great day to be West Virginian, right?
Wait a minute. Let me pot the mic down and just do this and get it out of the way. Let's go, Mountaineers. Let's go, Mountaineers. That's how you do that.
When is tip-off? It's coming up pretty soon, right?
It is about, let's see, 14, 20. It's about 24 minutes away.
Oh, my goodness. Is that the first game of the day?
I think so, yeah. It's over on I think it's the first one on TBS.
Oh, okay. Because it's either on CBS. I watched the games yesterday. They were great. CBS or what, 247? What is that, TBS or whatever? Is that what 247 is?
I don't know. I've got DirecTV now. I don't have numbers. I just have an alphabetical listing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, I watched that McDougal interview, and I'm confused, Bob. What is her point in coming forward now? You know, what's her angle? That was really the gist of my email.
As I understand it, as it's being explained by her counsel, it is, you know, she's not trying to get any money or anything. She has been called a liar, and she is demanding the right to tell the story and to defend herself against being called a liar.
But if there's no money in it, Bob, why is she a Republican and why did she vote for Trump? You know?
Well, there was money in it. She was paid by American media, the National Enquirer people.
Now she wants to Welsh on that, though.
No, she doesn't, because apparently the going consideration is that she can't sell her story to someone else, but she can damn sure tell it.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. I guess that's a distinction with the difference, I suppose, you know. I mean, legally speaking, anyway, you know.
Yeah, if she was out there hustling it to the highest, because, see, what happened is they bought her story from her, and then because they were maggots over at National Enquirer and the guy who runs it and everything, they spiked the story.
Yeah, they sat on it.
And to this day, they say, well, we haven't decided the appropriate time to publish that story or if there's going to be an appropriate time.
Right.
So
right.
They're in the catbird seat. They could conceivably say, it's possible it might be worth printing unless somebody made it worth our while not to.
Right.
Is Mr. Cohen still got his checkbook out?
Yeah, right. Well, I think, you know, I don't think Mr. Cohen has any more money because he's already maxed out on his home equity loans to basically pay for Trump's hush money, you know? You know, pony up the hush money for Trump's
right, affairs. And obviously I don't think you're licensed in the same jurisdiction as he is. But isn't that like get you in hot shit with the state bar kind of a thing? Isn't there something about lawyers not advancing monies to their clients?
Well, I mean, lawyers advance monies all the time to their clients, but, it could put him in a potential conflict of interest, I suppose, you know, because he may want to get his money back, for example, and it might not be in Trump's interest for him to get his money back, you know?
Well, but I mean, there's a distinction in there that says that, like, you can't loan your client money until the money comes in, like on a fender bender or something. A lawyer can say, you know, let's say a lawyer writes off for medical records. The lawyer can pay the per copy, per sheet charge or whatever for the medical records, the costs.
Yeah.
But then those costs have to be taken out on the back end when the case settles. Correct?
True. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the only way the client doesn't have to pay him is if the client doesn't recover. I still on yet? Right?
Yeah.
So a lawyer can advance funds that way, but the lawyer can't say, Hey, you know, I'm gonna pay this for you, and we'll settle up. We'll settle up one of these days, because that's right. Kind of what Michael Cohen did, isn't it?
That's what he says he did. I don't know if I believe him.
but if he yeah. said he did, and it's and that's arguably actionable, then if he didn't do that and he did something else, wouldn't it stand to reason that the something else was even worse?
Yeah, I suppose it would, wouldn't it? Yeah. I mean, he is such a sleazy attorney. And I don't doubt for a minute that he's made threats to, you know, various people on behalf of, you know, the Tangerine Tiberius over the years, you know? Because he's like a, you know, he looks like a mob lawyer, Bob. And just the way he talks and the way he kind of comes across, you know? You know, like it'd be real shame if something happened to your beautiful store window here. You know, this is like such a nice store here. I'd hate to have anything happen to it. You know,
nice line of home equity credit you got there. I'd hate if anything was to happen to it.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, I mean, you know, maybe McDougal's angle is just to get her story out. After all, I don't know. I mean, I guess. You know, what confuses me again is, you know, Republicans always want to get paid, Bob. And she's a Republican. She says she voted for Trump.
Oh, she says they were in love.
There you go. Right. And I'm not that kind of girl, you know. I didn't want to take his 10 grand. I mean, that's obviously his going rate for, you know, for prostitutes that he hires, you know. Because the $10,000 seems to be, you know, a recurring figure that comes up, you know, for every sexual liaison he has.
Oh, and speaking of dirty business, did you catch the story that came out about Roy Tola Moore and his campaign?
No.
This one's kind of a fun one.
Okay.
The Washington Post had the story today. I think it was today. I hope it wasn't an old story. It looked like breaking news. I hadn't heard it before. Two of Roy Moore's supporters tried to buy off Lee Korfman. Remember Lee?
Mm-hmm.
They tried to buy off her lawyer.
No. Oh,
saying they'd give him $10,000 and let him really, actually, honest to goodness, meet the Steve Bannon. If he'd just say he didn't find Lee Korfman's story believable and he wasn't going to represent her.
Oh, jeez.
And if you go over to the Washington Post and you read this thing, it's a long, detailed article. Every story that comes out of this regime now reads like a John le Carré novel written by people in crayon who don't have John le Carré's vocabulary.
And they're smoking meth and taking things apart as they're writing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's just, right. Let's see here. Days after a woman accused U.S. Senate candidate Roy Moore of sexual impropriety, two Moore supporters approached her attorney with an unusual request. They asked lawyer Eddie Sexton to drop, really, there's a lawyer named Sexton in the whole, Jesus, the goddess of irony. Working the fine grain.
She never sleeps, Bob. How does she manage it?
They asked lawyer Eddie Sexton, and of course, you know what a sexton is in oldie English, right?
Yeah, it's a navigation instrument.
No,
right?
That's a sextant, S-E-X-T-A-N-T.
Oh, okay. What is the sexton?
A gravedigger.
Oh. Okay.
To drop the woman as a client and say publicly that he did not believe her. The damaging statement would be given to Breitbart News, then run by former White House strategist Stephen K. Bannon. In exchange, Sexton said in recent interviews, the men offered to pay him $10,000 and promised to introduce him to Bannon and others in the nation's capital. Parts of Sexton's account are supported by recorded phone conversations, text messages, and people in whom he confided at the time. it goes on and on and on. The Washington Post has recorded phone conversations and text messages. One of the men spoke of ties to Moore and Bannon while urging Sexton to help cloud the allegations, which included other women's claims that Moore pursued them when they were teenagers and he was in his 30s. Yeah, what they're saying, all they want to do is cloud something. Gary Landtrip, who attended at least one private fundraising event for Moore, said during a phone call recorded by Sexton, they said if they cloud like two of them, that's all they need. Landtrip also made, this is the funny part, Landtrip also made references to money, at one point speaking haltingly about, the $10, a shorthand for the $10,000 offer, Sexton said. We got some chance to do something, Landtrip said during the recorded call. And it goes,
Bob, with all these stories that come out, I just want to know, who's going to jail and when are they going to go to jail? This is just totally outrageous. There's got to be a crime there somewhere. Maybe a campaign finance crime, or maybe a conspiracy.
I think there is a whole Easter basket full of crimes, and Bob Mueller's just sitting there counting eggs right now. Easter's on April Fool's this year for anybody who's curious. Goddess of irony and all.
Wouldn't that be a great day for the indictment?
Bob, it's a basket of deplorables. For Easter.
Oh, wait. Yes, absolutely, VT Blom. It's an Easter basket of deplorables. See, this is what makes the Friday on the Front Porch Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable so extraordinary. It's an Easter basket of deplorables.
I don't do Easter.
Well, you're lucky. Like I've said before, you didn't have your mind poisoned at an early age.
When I was a little kid.
Well, you're never too old to do it,
There, you know what? Tomorrow, I think it's tomorrow, rain or shine, there is a grown-up Easter egg hunt over across the river in Fayetteville. And I almost, but it might be kind of fun to watch the drunk people hunt for Easter eggs.
What's in the Easter eggs?
Oh, like gift certificates to local restaurants and businesses and stuff.
No boozing, no stoners allowed.
If you said that a couple of Easter eggs were going to have, an eighth of rhubarb peanut butter roasted marshmallow bubble gum kush in it or something, the place would probably be overrun. I can't keep up with the brand names anymore.
Well, I just did some sour diesel.
Well, that sounds lovely. Oh, speaking of which, for the second time in about as many months, West Virginia no longer has a drug czar. Our latest drug czar quit again because he realized that nobody's really serious about doing anything about the problem. Yeah.
There's no money, isn't there?
Well, no, I mean, there's money in the appropriations from last night. There's money. And you know what? This is kind of a big deal, too. There was a little something snuck into the bill that was passed last night and signed by Tangerine Tiberius today. There's a little passage in there that says the Department of Justice and the Attorney General shall not be allowed to use any of the funds in this here appropriation for pursuing states that have legalized medical marijuana. Because United States Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III had specifically asked the Congress not to put that language in. But a whole bunch of Congress critters, who, of course, remember, are not subject to drug testing, probably thought better of it. So, that's actually kind of a win. But as intelligent as it would be to legalize cannabis in West Virginia just once and for all, nah, we're not going to do that. We're not smart enough. So, yeah, that. Okay, let's see. Who else? Okay, this is funny. Les with a note. Cohen equals Better Call Saul. Yeah, I think Saul's a better lawyer than Cohen is, isn't he? I mean, you're a Better Call Saul guy, aren't you, Sparky?
Yeah, he's way better than Cohen.
He's actually got a sense of humor too, which is good. Which
probably can and can probably even clearly enunciate the rule against perpetuities.
Right.
I would imagine.
That's every law student's favorite, Bob. The rap.
Yep. I graduated in 1991, and I'm sitting here in 2018 still tormented by it, so there you go.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, let's check in and see what's going on with Steve from Georgistan. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Bob. What's going on, man?
Great day to be a West Virginian.
I hear you, brother. I hear you. It's just a lot to absorb everything that's going in here lately, isn't it?
Can't keep up.
And this John Bolton guy, if you turn on the TV and what the people are saying about him, the people in the know, it'll scare the hell out of you.
Well, he's a coward.
A war hawk.
He's a coward and a creep and an abuser and, well, yeah. In other words, he's a typical Republican.
But he was on record. He wants to go to war with North Korea. He wants to go to war with Cuba. He wants to go to war with Iran.
Iran, yeah.
And
don't forget Venezuela.
Yeah. And people.
Well, see, that's where my money is, Sparky.
Yeah.
I don't mean I keep my money in Venezuela, but Pooty Poot won't want. Russia has business interests in Iran, so Pooty won't want him attacking Iran. And Pooty doesn't want him attacking North Korea because that whole common border with China thing could just get out of control in a hot minute and be a hot mess. So that kind of leaves Venezuela. So I was thinking about that, and I'm betting, don't be surprised after Bolton comes in to find out that we've attacked Venezuela, because people should remember that, our national symbol is the bald eagle. Ben Franklin wanted the wild turkey because it's the smartest bird in the woods. But we got the bald eagle. And the fact of the matter is, the bald eagle never attacks anything its own size and would prefer to eat things that are already dead if given an opportunity. So, that. Anyway, sorry I interrupted you, Steve. Go ahead.
No worries. I'm enjoying the conversation. It's just, you have to really keep yourself grounded to keep from freaking out, because they're talking. They wouldn't put it past this guy, this Bolton guy, to give the nod for. I don't even want to say it, but you know what I'm thinking, for the unthinkable. And that's scary to even contemplate or wrap your head around. I mean, we'll be blasted back to 1870s technology if something's even overhead and we detonate it. It doesn't even land. I mean, just the electromagnetic field itself could. I mean, the implications ought to frighten the hell out of everyone to the point where we've got to do something. I don't know if it's time to march. What do you think?
I think January the 20th, 2017 was a time for about a million people to sit in and sit down around the Capitol and the White House and not leave, but we've discussed how impossible that is.
So the logistics makes it impossible.
So now tomorrow, we wait and we watch and we see what people all over the country do relative to the never again marches. There won't be a never again march anywhere near me.
There's probably one in Atlanta, and I probably need to go from a moral standpoint, but I just don't know if I'll make it or not. And I'm shameful to admit it, but I'm being honest.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Rick.
I heard that you...
It's too near me.
Bob, I heard that there is a march near you. It's called Bring It On.
Well, I was going to say there might be an open carry gathering in the Walmart parking lot, but you know,
they got to avoid that one.
Yeah, it's scary. It's scary enough to see some dude with a hog leg strapped on, standing in the checkout, searching with his beady little eyes, looking all around, waiting for the ISIS terrorist to come after his loaf of bread and jug of milk. It's a little scary.
Well, am I being an overreactionary, or is the threat real? I mean, you tell me.
Which threat? I mean, there's lots of real threats out there, Steve. That's the problem. You got to narrow it down some.
Well, statistically speaking, what do you think the chances are nukes will start being lobbed in the air back and forth, either to here or there, or pick one of the countries that the Agent Orange could divert to take the attention off of the mess that he's in? And he's
I thought I was gonna get away with doing Friday on the Front Porch and not having to get out the tattered purple robe with the frayed appliqued moons and stars and "Will thee kiss me in the dark, baby" written in glowing in the dark paint across the chest, and the busted magic eight ball that says "Answer Hazy, ask again later" all the time. But if I'm gonna have to get to prophesying, Bolton is the kind of guy who will shiv you between the ribs from behind, okay? He's like a cut purse. He's a highwayman, a sneak thief. He never had the courage to put the uniform on himself, but instead, well, I mean, he put the uniform on. He put on the uniform of the National Guard, kind of like Dim Leader did. But, you know, didn't go when he had a chance to, but he loves to watch other people go. And so I'm guessing what he would like to do is he'd like to maybe preemptively, remember the Bush Doctrine? It's still out there.
Oh, yeah.
He'd like to preemptively strike North Korea. Because that's what he was writing about in that piece, where that worrisome piece that he published. Mm-hmm. He says it's time now for a preemptive strike against North Korea. Now, that doesn't mean he wants to use nukes. That means maybe a couple of carrier battle groups and a whole bunch of Tomahawk cruise missiles, and we do a light show like we did over Baghdad. And then his hope is that North Korea would respond by nuking somebody, or would respond by, you know, slaughtering a few million people in South Korea, and then it would be really on.
Jesus Christ. Even the fact that we're having this conversation is enough to make the hair on the back of your neck stand up, but it's a reality.
Hey, look, I'm the guy who had to give up the rot gut tequila and the swirly straw. Who do you think you're talking to?
Oh, man, I picked a hell of a time to jump on the wagon.
Yeah, you just stare. You're just sitting there with your little Alex from Clockwork Orange the framework on your face, and your eyes just sort of peeled wide open while you stare at the wondrous horror of it all.
Well, I'm trying to escape. I know this is probably not the thing to do, but I went out and got one of the New York Times bestsellers, and I've just dove into that. You know, I can't. And for guys, you know, I said this last week, I don't know how you all do it where you can't turn it off and still maintain your sanity.
It's not so much sanity, Steve, as it is weariness. I mean, I'm not changing the subject or anything, but it's been much on my mind since the new year turned over. May 1st will be the 25th anniversary for Agnes and me.
Oh, that's awesome. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. And I would love, but there are so many things in flux right now. I would love nothing more than to just be able to get away for a week with her.
You need to, Bob. You really do, just to maintain your own, to keep yourself grounded.
Well, but the thing is, you know, that's costly. And when I'm not behind the microphone, you know.
Right, and a staycation would be out of the question. There's just
Well, if, no, I mean, if we did a staycation, she'd just look at me and go, go back there and get to work.
Yeah, you'd be under each other's feet. Yeah, I know how that works. Well, yeah, with my wife and I, our house isn't that big, you know. You kind of tend to bump into each other.
So, well, and the whole point is not to be away from each other, but
right.
do a little change of scenery or something.
Right, do something. And there's you've probably did everything locally within a 90-mile radius.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be nice to, it's only, 6, 7, 8 hours down to Myrtle?
Mm-hmm.
That'd be nice, something like that, but...
That ride you took day before yesterday that you were elaborating on sounded very intriguing to me, where the temperature actually changed.
Oh, yeah, there was no snow at the bottom of the gorge. I mean, if you look at the video that I shot, and it's on Facebook, every now and then you'll see a little white fleck blow past the lens of the camera. Those are snowflakes. But as you can see, there was no snow on the ground. Back up 1,000 feet in elevation, everything was covered, 2, 3, 4, 5 inches.
I was trying to Google that to find the difference between sea levels, and I got nothing. And maybe somebody else out there can nail that down. I'd be interested to know.
And when warm weather comes, we've been talking about it a lot. We're gonna put on our good hiking shoes, and we're gonna do a lot of walking through those trails, because it's good and it's good mental health. But most of that's the kind of stuff that'll happen on the weekend, assuming that that some of these issues that are plaguing us right now.
There's so much stuff that you can do locally just to give yourself a mental break. And I encourage people to do it, because if you just sit in front of the TV and watch news all the time, it will play on your mental stability. I mean, if you have any politically awareness about you at all.
Well, for instance, just today, how eclectic is this? The best restaurant on my side of the river for miles and miles and miles is a little Thai joint. And the woman who runs it is just as sweet and kind a human being as you could ever want. So just for a change of scenery, I drove up there for lunch. And she's afraid that I'm going to waste away to nothing. I couldn't see the plate for all the food she mounded on it. I'm still full, and that was like.
Noon.
Yeah, that was like 6 hours ago. She did curried beef with potatoes and sweet and sour chicken, and she makes these beautiful little pork dumplings and spring rolls to die for, and the whole thing's like $7.
Wow.
I mean, you can't eat at McDonald's for that.
She must just do it for the love of doing it. You know.
Oh no! I mean, she's right there in tourist country, so.
Oh, okay.
She sets up this little cafeteria bar, but it's not like you go in and order from the menu. You go in, and what she's got is what you get.
I was late to the party. How you doing in fundraising, Mr. Kincaid?
If everything plays out, I think we're done.
Excellent. Glad to hear it. That's one thorn out of your ass, isn't it?
And I've got. I paid one humongous bill yesterday, and I've got because it's winter, and I've got a humongous freaking power bill to pay over the weekend. So hopefully that'll all be there, and I'll be able to do that.
Hey, go ahead, Duncan.
Well, I was going to tell Bob there's a March for Our Lives in Charleston.
Oh, is there?
Yeah, tomorrow at 10 a.m. 1900 Kanawha.
Kanawha.
How do you say that?
Kanawha
Boulevard.
Kanawha, yeah, Kanawha.
Boulevard, East Charleston.
What are you, about 3 hours removed from Charleston, Bob?
Oh, no, I'm about an hour and 15 minutes or so. Hour and a half when you work out parking.
Kind of like me schlepping to Atlanta, then. So you know what I'm saying?
No, it's nothing like you schlepping to Atlanta. Atlanta is fun. Atlanta is nice.
But to go there for a march, you know, I've
Hey, I was gonna ask you. I mean, you go way back in the day in Atlanta. I mean, were you there in the 80s?
I moved to Atlanta. It was probably 1987.
So did you ever eat at a place that was on the corner of Peachtree and Juniper? Did you ever eat at a place called Brother Juniper's? It was
No, sir.
It was a sandwich shop that was run by a bunch of monks. Because they've got a monastery out from Atlanta, maybe out toward Conyers or something. And they baked their own bread, made their own cheeses, all of that stuff. And they had a sandwich called the Happy Hermit that was every bit of 6 inches tall, and it was triple layered, and it had every meat they had in the house, and avocado and lettuce and tomatoes and onions and sprouts. And oh, it was the best sandwich I ever had in my life.
I wonder if it's still there.
No, I actually looked into it. It's gone. I think there's some big ass building sitting on it now.
The restaurant, the talk of the town when I first moved here, and you probably remember this, was Ray's on the River.
Oh yeah, I knew people that worked at Ray's on the River.
Yeah, that was way. And I don't think it's there anymore. Now I could be wrong. I'd have to Google it, but I'm not sure. But who else do we have in here tonight? Is that VT Blom?
That's VT Blom, and we got Larry, and we got Billable Rick. Let's check in with Larry. We haven't heard from Larry. Larry? Okay, moving on. VT Blom, anything after the trenchant Easter basket of deplorables comment? I mean, you're going to have a hell of a...
Hi. How are you?
Oh, there's Larry. Okay. Hi, Larry. How are you?
I'm okay. I just got a little cold.
Oh.
And I'm trying to keep myself warm and hydrated. And other than that, I'm just kind of, you know, laying low, I guess, or as low as I can.
Is a storm hitting you right now?
No, it looks very nice outside. The weather is very nice.
We're waiting out thunderstorms.
Yes.
It looks like. Just to interject real quick, Ray's on the River is still there, Bob.
Is it really?
Yeah.
That was good eats back in the day.
Yeah, I don't know what to do about the world about the political situation. I just try to pretend that I'm not. I try to practice denial as much as I can. It's a mess. It really is a mess. What's going to happen as a result of all of it? You know what I'm saying, Bob.
Oh yeah.
You know what I'm saying. We'll just have to watch. I just wish they could impeach the whole Congress.
That's what elections are. It's a chance to impeach and remove from office the entire not the whole Congress, but the ones that are worthless.
Yeah, right now the Democratic Party themselves are the DCC, you know, the Congressional Campaign Committee. Apparently have been going after a few Democratic candidates that they're not supporting. They're supporting some Democratic candidates over others for ideological reasons. And I haven't really dug very deeply into it, but The Nation magazine has been talking about it. Very interesting, the most recent Nation magazine that I got has a story about Iceland's prime minister, who's a feminist, a green, and a socialist. So that brought some happiness to me, or at least I was happy reading that. It's the happiest news or the happiest information that I've gotten in a long time.
Well, with all due respect, Larry, you're not going to get a lot of love for the Greens. I'm not talking about the international Greens, but the national ones, the U.S. Greens. Yeah, I'm not going to waste any time on them. I have here, and as a reason why, I have here a quote from Jill Stein on the 19th day of October, 2016. So this would be just a couple of weeks before the general election. This is Jill Stein. If you watched the debate the other night, you would have heard Trump saying that he's looking for collaboration with Putin. He's got business interests all over the place. On that basis, hey, wow, maybe he'd be the peace president because he needs peace all over the place. Yeah, climate change is horrific, but it's not happening tomorrow. Jill Stein, well, leader of the Green Party.
Yeah, well, luckily she's, or...
Hold on, she'll be back. Anyway. She'll be back in 2020 like a bad penny, Larry. You can bet on it. Or well, it'll be somebody equally stupid.
Oh, I'm hearing somebody's phone ring. So at any rate, what's the new Skype? There's a new Skype program that's...
Well, it's just a more recent version. I think you're probably best off leaving it alone.
Okay.
Larry, well, you're on a Mac. You're not getting hit with the message from Windows.
Okay. Virginia just tied it up, Bob. 22-all.
Oh,
10 minutes
cool.
left in the first half. Yeah, thought I'd give you an update.
Interestingly enough, didn't West Virginia play Marshall?
Yeah, last weekend, Sunday night.
That must have been fun for you.
It was because they beat them by like 23 points. Which is, you know, I would have been happier if they'd beaten them by 33 or 53, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, all of the Pac-12 teams, with the exception of Utah, were all knocked out of the NIT.
Over in the NCAA tournament, Larry, there was something of a Paxit.
Yes, that's right. That's exactly right.
Led by Arizona, who completely humiliated themselves.
UCLA didn't do any better.
No.
St. Bonaventura.
I mean, the Pac-12 kind of got exposed.
The first day, all three teams in the NCAA lost.
Bang, bang, bang.
Pac-12.
Meanwhile, I do not love the Big 12 that WVU is in, but Kansas is still there for at least the rest of the night, or the WVU is still there. Texas Tech is still in it, and Kansas State is still in it. Out of six, you know, having 25% of the Sweet 16 is saying something.
Yeah.
Well, I can't. I have a hard time because I had Virginia going all the way, and then they went out in the first night. So.
Oh, and what spectacular fashion! Because, I mean, I was sitting. I was sitting across the river. I just wanted to, you know, watch it. And there was a room full of people just standing there with their mouths hanging open. Couldn't believe what was happening. You know, because that one, I mean, there were a couple of years when a 16 came close, but then they always falter there at the very end. Those guys from Maryland, Baltimore County just poured it on.
Yeah, Virginia looked slack, which was it was really unusual for Virginia. But hey, I have no dog. I have no dog in the hunt. And it's just a friend of mine is a UVA grad. So
I know a bunch of I know a bunch of UVA guys, and
it was. I used to do spring break down at UVA with him when he.
Well, Ron and Raleigh, who comments during a lot of the programs, and I have not said anything because I didn't want to be perceived as rubbing anything in. But Ron and Raleigh's a UVA guy, and I almost sent like a note of condolence, just sorry, man, sorry, wow.
Yeah, my buddy who graduated UVA and then did his. Graduate work at UNC, and he's living in North Carolina now. He works there, and so he's in Boston, but he hates Duke. he works for UNC and hates Duke, and they're 6 miles apart.
Oh, but if you're at UNC, hating Duke is almost a
is that comes with the territory.
Yeah, absolutely. and if somebody could get Coach Ferretface out of the tournament, I would be so happy. Because, you know, one of the things about watching Duke is you can they're a bunch of cheap shot artists, but Krzyzewski sits over there like, you know, and makes them all look like butter wouldn't melt in their mouths. But no, they're brutal. And
that one player they have there, Grayson.
Yeah.
He's the one that he's been suspended several times in his career for dirty play. And he's still playing. They love him.
And so I'd really like to see them go ahead and exit, but
that was my feeling about Arizona with all the crap going on with them. When they got bounced, I was very happy to see. I don't like them. I don't like their coach because he pulled the whole Trump thing. It was all false, you know. Well, it was fake news. None of it's true. He actually said that when they were accusing him of, you know, paying players.
And of course, I confess that I was glad to see Michigan State go out of it just because.
Because of their problems, yeah. Same thing.
Right.
Their coach just stood up there. Oh, we don't have any problems. They've got three players on Michigan State that are under investigation, have criminal charges for rape. So, they're all angels. But they're playing. The whole thing, I have my buddy at UNC. I posted up on his page one day on Facebook. I said, hey, let's start a war. I said, let's abolish the NCAA and start over. Just to start an argument with a bunch of his friends.
Yeah.
Boy, that got some flames running. The NCAA seems to be outliving its usefulness.
Well, especially in basketball, this whole one-and-done phenomenon, that's just ridiculous, you know? I mean, and speaking of one-and-done university lost Kentucky, so I was kind of happy to see that happen. Didn't expect it, you know, but it did happen, you know? So, I mean, I like these teams that have the, you know, they recruit these, like, three-star players, and they stay there all 4 years.
Well, and Javon Carter at WVU is the classic example right now of that.
Yeah.
Busted his ass for 4 years, treated school like school was worth being at.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's the way a lot of these colleges, you know, operate. Like Iowa does the same thing with their, you know, athletes. You know, they don't get the blue chip at and you know get them in the program and keep them there for a number of years. You know, so I mean that's the whole idea behind amateur athletics. It's sort of, you know, when you get these schools that like Louisville and Kentucky, they just have these players that, you know, stay for a year and then they're on to the next thing, and you know.
Well, that was the thing I liked about Virginia too, because they have their coach is he's trying real hard to get 3 year players.
Mm-hmm.
He really works hard to make a team that stays around.
Yeah, and I think realistically most of these players aren't ready to play pro ball after just 1 year of college. Like look at Lonzo Ball, the guy. The guy couldn't shoot in college, and he still can't shoot as a Laker, you know?
Oh, nope. Yeah, but it isn't. I mean, when it comes to the balls, aren't they kind of sui generis? I mean, aren't they a thing unto themselves?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're
kind of like the Kardashians.
Yeah, kind of like the Kardashians. I mean, it's sort of like the Jackson family.
Yeah, exactly,
you know,
like the Kardashians. Famous
as they are in basketball. You
yeah,
know?
Famous for being famous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and with an overbearing father, you know, trying to promote them and so forth.
Oh yeah, yeah, because their dad makes Earl Woods look like a shrinking violet.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
Well, I'm rooting for Syracuse. over Duke. That's a long shot, but.
Well, so is WVU over Villanova, and they're leading right now.
Yeah, they're up by a point, I think.
Yep, 25-24.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got the game on in the background.
Well, if they play anything like they and it's hard to tell because the quality of the talent that Marshall had, but if they play like they played against Marshall, they could play anybody in the country and win. But that's been the rap on the Mountaineers all years, you know, who shows up. And the worst thing in the world they can have is like a 10 or 11 point lead. I can't tell you how many big leads they've blown this year.
So, hey, Steve from Kurdistan, you were asking how we survive, you know, the news blitz and paying attention to it all the time. One thing is I don't ever watch news on TV unless there's something really major going on and there's, you know, something that I'll flip on and catch the speeches and that kind of stuff. But for the most part, I don't watch news. I don't listen to news. Occasionally I hit NPR. What I do, I read it. I read all the wire services. I read Washington Post, New York Times, Chicago Sun Times, Miami Herald, LA Times, just whatever I can get online, anything that I can get. I read all those and then the foreign papers. And that way I can digest it in chunks. It doesn't get slammed into me. It's all through the course of the day. I get all the headlines and I kind of keep up with it all day long.
Which foreign papers?
Guardian, for one. That's mm-hmm. my main outside source. But I also, mm-hmm. Al Jazeera, the French. But the French papers, I have a hard time with. They tend to go in odd directions on occasion. So you have to kind of take them with a grain of salt.
Yeah. That's one strategy. Yeah, it's just that the news has become such a gossip mongering kind of a business.
Well, yeah, the U.S. Oh, yeah, the U.S.
Hey, oh, it's relentless. It's ongoing. It's relentless. It never lets up.
That's why you get a clearer picture if you're reading direct from the wire services, whether it's Reuters.
Right. That's what I do.
Yeah, Reuters, or even, you know, there's McClatchy, even Bloomberg. You can get some good reporting there. AFP, I read it. AFP's straight wire service reporting is different from reading French publications.
I do AFP and I do AP and Reuters. Those are my main news feeds, and those usually lead you to other places.
And AP usually breaks stuff earlier than just about anybody else. So if you've got AP's app and you just set it up and allow it to alert you, you'll generally see stuff. For instance, today they were the first ones to put across the gunman holding hostages in France.
Right.
And for the most part, it's pretty straightforward. It's pretty straightforward reporting.
See, but what I was saying was, in order to keep my sanity, I don't watch the news. I ingest it all that way, but I ingest it slowly through the day. But I watch sports. That's basically all I ever watch. I have some form of ESPN or one of their ilk on.
We all know about my filthy little habit. I made a point of setting my alarm so I would get up at the beginning of Morning Joe this morning, just because
you watch Joe, huh?
Oh, it's that or Washington Journal, and you know Steve and Todd are taking that one for the
that's
team.
Steve's job.
Yeah, Steve and Todd both have that nailed down. So, you know, no, I figured with the Bolton stuff that Mika would be having a baby live on air this morning, and I was not disappointed. But Joe apparently decided to lay out today.
Tweety was going into conniption fits last night.
But it doesn't take much to push him into one of those now, does it?
No.
I mean, he has a conniption if the grocery store's out of vanilla ice cream.
Who is Tweety?
Chris Matthews.
Oh, okay.
Ha!
There was a determination made years and years and years ago now that he bears a striking resemblance to Tweety Bird.
Well.
Especially from the one episode where Tweety Bird turns in, you know, the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde thing. Yeah, mm-hmm. he looks like the Mr. Hyde Tweety Bird.
Now, Bob, this AP app, do you have it on your phone or on your computer, your PC as well? It's available both
now, I'm not back here in the studio, well, especially during the winter, a whole bunch in the studio simply mm-hmm. because it's so cold.
Got it.
But I've got it on my phone and on my tablets. And
I working from home, I'm generally stuck in front of my computers, but it would be a distraction if it was constantly flagging stories up in my face. You know?
No, they're not real pushy about it. They're not aggressive.
Okay.
Yeah, they only break stuff that looks and feels and sounds like breaking news.
Well, maybe I can bring Rick in on this, but I'm of the opinion, I'm sure just about everybody else is who's paying attention, is Trump is paving the way to fire Mueller. I mean, that's evident.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean,
but he can't.
Then
but he
what are you
can't
going to do then?
He can't simply fire him. He has to order him to be fired. So somebody has to take that order.
Now I don't know the chain of command or how that works. I'm not that deep into it. But is that where Bolton could come into play, or
no?
Can he
that's
leverage
no,
somebody into doing it. Or?
This is the weird part where you wind up, if you're a praying man, fall asleep every night and praying for the long service of United States Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, because as long as he's Attorney General, he remains recused from the Mueller investigation.
Oh, okay.
Which means that Rod Rosenstein, his second, is the guy who would have to fire him. Now, I'm glad you mentioned this because something interesting happened today. I don't know if you caught the press release where Rosenstein announced the indictment of 9 Iranians for hacking and stealing 31 terabytes of data from libraries and yada, 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 yada. On its face, it looks like saber-rattling, and on its face, it looks like something that, say, April 9th when Bolton comes in. Well, yeah, this cannot stand. We must attack Iran. But again, Putiput has a lot of business. You know, if Russia has business in Iran, that means Putiput has business in Iran. You know, they're at that level of authoritarian, dictatorial, tyrannical rule where l'état c'est moi, you know, what Louis XIV said, the state is me. And so Russia has business in Iran. That means Putiput is making money out of business in Iran, which means that he doesn't want Iran attacked by the United States, especially given the fact that Assad is getting quite close to finally wiping out all resistance and putting Syria back completely under his heel. So Putin doesn't want an attack on Iran, but Rosenstein, by coming out and doing this announcing these indictments and this saber rattling, makes it look like he's doing the administration's bidding and saying bruga 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 at Iran, which makes him a guy you don't necessarily want to fire because he's being a loyal soldier. And so indirectly, and this I know this sounds it might sound just crazy as hell, but indirectly, what he did today with those Iranian indictments might actually prove to be job security for Mueller.
Well, that's
does that make you feel? Does that make everybody feel like we've been drinking for a while? Because it does me.
Yeah, I think
it's
so.
A long way around in the big circle, huh?
Let's light up some Kush candy, folks.
Yeah, let's do it, man.
Yeah.
Oh, some rhubarb bubblegum marshmallow Kush.
Yeah, right.
Rhubarb huckleberry bubblegum peanut butter marshmallow Kush. Sooner or later, they're going to run out of names.
Well, I don't
from
think they're
the, from the sounds of it, they already have.
Yeah.
And they're just recycling them in pairs.
Could be. Although, Bob, you have a lot of nutraceuticals at Horn Nutraceuticals, and you haven't run out of names yet, you know?
Well, as long as there are adjectives and as long as stuff grows on Earth, right.
Hey, I'm really enjoying the ferns, you know?
Oh, the fibrous fiddlehead ferns or fiber-free fiddlehead ferns. What were they? I forget.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
No, they're good and good for you.
And there really is such a thing as a fiddlehead fern, huh?
And they're yummy.
Hmm.
Yeah, just do the little shoots. Yeah. Of course, soon, if spring ever arrives, we'll get the first early growth of dandelions, and I'm going to run and I'll run out in the yard and just gather dandelions and wash them and cook them. Dandelion greens are freaking delicious.
Mm.
And it's an awesome spring tonic. People in the Mediterranean eat them with like lemon, just sort of cooked and braised and with a little lemon and salt on them, and they live to be 100. I'm not sure it's entirely the dandelions, but it is part of a healthy, balanced Mediterranean diet.
Yeah, I was never fond of the dandelion greens. I did fiddleheads. We used to go out and pick them.
Yeah, they're tasty. They're tasty, aren't they?
Yeah, we used to pickle them.
Ooh, I've never had them pickled.
Them right up. Yeah, you can them up and with a little bit of dill. They're tasty.
Oh, my salivary glands work. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the poke will be coming up. When the poke comes up, you don't want to let them get big and broadleaf. You want to pick the tender again with the tender young leaves.
When's ramp season?
Any day now.
Are you a fan?
Love them. Absolutely love them.
They smell like ass when you cook them, though, don't they?
Yeah, no, they just smell. They just smell brutally of onions, garlic, leeks. I mean, the word ramp is derived from the ancient Welsh word for garlic, ramp, ramsich. Ever know anybody named Ramsey? Ever heard that last name?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, that word comes from the ancient Welsh, well, as I'm told, Ramsech, if I'm pronouncing it right, which means, you know, field of garlic. Or I read that as an etymology somewhere. Just out the road from me is a little place called Ramsey. I have Ramseys in my family tree.
So do you out and dig them yourself, or...?
Usually there's people sell them on the side of the road, or you can buy them up at the Wiggling Pig. They'll have a few bags.
That's interesting.
And what you do, you know, and there's all, you know, around here, you know, ramps and beans, ramps and eggs. But I've done interesting things with them. You can't have a heavy hand with them though, because a little goes a long way.
Yeah, they're pretty potent, aren't they?
They are. But I made a cream of asparagus soup one time and sautéed some ramps and put it in there. So, and you want to talk about just freaking fabulous? You know, with like some crusty, toasty French bread and just a bowl of that cream of ramp and asparagus. Oh yeah, it was right. You know, just buttery and creamy with that richness of the asparagus, and then bam, here comes the ramps. And you can pickle them too. I know people who pickle them. And they're mighty good that way. And then once spring gets here, people will go out and start hunting for morels, or what they call around here molly moochers. And you just you rinse them and get all the little spiders out of the crenellations and everything, and you roll them in flour and fry them in butter. Hoo-hoo, yeah. Meanwhile, I just got a note from Scott and Punky. Horn Labs announces reciprocating radish extract, though I'd avoid the suppository version, says Scott. I generally advise people to avoid the suppository version of anything. Did I lose you guys?
No, we're here.
Oh, okay.
Multitasking.
Everybody's watching the damn basketball game, aren't they?
Yeah, the Mountaineers are ahead, 35-33, Bob.
Cool.
3 minutes left in the first half, 3.5 minutes.
Nail biter.
Yeah. Yeah, my bracket died. I had Michigan State playing against Gonzaga for the national championship.
Who?
Yeah. I had Michigan State against Virginia, so I went out.
Yeah.
Now I'm rooting for Syracuse just because I'm an old Northeasterner.
Yeah. Well, you know, Syracuse is, you know, I wasn't entirely surprised that they beat Michigan State because they have a way of really playing well in the tournament, even if they sucked during the regular season, you know?
Yeah.
Because they've made some pretty deep runs in years where, you know, they had like a 50-50 record in the conference or even a little below that and barely sneaked into the NCAAs, and you know, they could definitely give the Dukies, is it? Do they play the Dukies a hard time?
See, Duke has played them before, and the reason that Syracuse can win is because Boeheim plays a zone defense.
Oh, okay. And
most of the colleges have never gone up against a good zone defense.
Okay.
So you know, it's why they can win. Duke has gone up against a good. In fact, they shellacked Syracuse earlier this year.
They
beat them. They beat them by like 30 points.
And who's playing Michigan? Is it Florida?
Florida State, I think.
FSU.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Florida State got in by surprise. They weren't supposed to go anywhere.
Yeah, I need Michigan. I'll piss off the Michigan contingent now. I need Michigan to lose because I hate John Beilein. I hold a grudge. He was part of that one year when Michigan came down here and poached practically every coach WVU had. They got Rich Rod and Big Hair Rita, and then they got Beilein, and then they got our soccer coach too, I think.
Michigan with the football team does the same thing.
Well, that's the way it is with coaching. I mean, if there's no, you know, if you can contact a coach and get away with it and poach them, you can do it. I mean, that doesn't happen in the NFL because teams have to ask permission to interview coaches on other teams. You know, you can't just, you know, hire
and you know, Beilein is still there, but Rich and Big Hair Rita are long gone.
Yeah, Rich didn't do so well at Michigan, as I recall. You know,
well, they never really wanted him in the first place. They wanted Les the Mad Hatter Miles out of LSU. And when they couldn't get Saban and they couldn't get Miles, they settled on Rodriguez.
Okay.
And you will never convince me of that particular season. You will never convince me that he did not deliberately throw the Pitt game at the end of that season.
This is Pitt against West Virginia, or what?
Yeah. The calls that were made.
What, Bob?
They were. I don't mean the officiating calls. I mean the play calling.
Yeah. Right.
We're completely out of character, and I think we wound up losing 11-8.
Ah, jeez. So they did a lot of like run, pass, punt kind of
up the middle,
you know,
up the middle, up the
strategy.
Middle, punt, up the middle, up the middle, up the middle, punt.
Yeah. Jeez. Well, there you go.
And yet, to this day, you've got Mountaineer fans who say, I sure do wish we could get Rich Rod back.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he didn't exactly say, is he still at Arizona, or did they finally ditch him?
I don't think he's at Arizona anymore.
I lost track.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe he's not even coaching at all, you know? And if you're bad enough, you basically, nobody wants you anymore, you know?
I honestly do not know. So yeah. It's about 21 minutes past the hour. Is there? I've got a list of Bolton quotes here, and I just had a note from our buddy Chris up in the Northwest Territories, and he said all the ruddy duck needs to do now to complete the trifecta is Negroponte. Now that's scary. I hadn't even thought about John Negroponte, but my God, that's horrifying. So expect him just any time now.
That's seriously dragging one out of the mud. It's reminding me of, I was having a conversation with somebody today about this administration reminds me of an old Japanese horror film called Calling All Monsters. Really terrible. It was, you know, it had everybody, Mothra, Godzilla, Son of Godzilla. I mean, every monster you ever saw in every bad Japanese movie ever made was in this one movie. And that's what this is starting to look like. This whole administration is starting to remind me of this bad, bad B Japanese movie. And it's getting worse and worse.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard, you know, it's hard to have sympathy for the former chief of ExxonMobil, but, I mean, I was actually rooting for Rex there, you know, to stay on. I mean, that's how bad the administration is.
Well, right now, the loneliest man in Washington, D.C. is James Mattis.
Oh, yeah.
But, one of the things they were talking about this morning was how last night, H.R. McMaster was at a tribute dinner for George H.W. Bush and John McCain, neither of whom were in attendance. But he was in Jebya. Remember Jebya? Please clap.
Jebya.
he was at the dais, and he.
I have too little energy to do that, Bob. Sorry.
Yeah. He was at the dais, and he called out H.R. McMaster and had him stand up, and there was a warm round of applause for him, and everybody honeybeed around him after the thing was over. And I know we're supposed to get all upset because, remember, these were going to be the stabilizing influences on Trump. You know, John Kelly and H.R. McMaster and Mattis, and Rexxon Tillerson had been the CEO.
Yeah.
Funniest thing I saw or heard all week was John Goodman last week on Saturday Night Live. In the cold opening, John Goodman playing Rex Tillerson.
Yeah, that was a scream, wasn't it?
I about hurt myself. There was one line he looked up and said, hey, one day you're the CEO of Exxon, and next day you wake up and you've been fired by a guy who sold meat through the mail.
Anybody that has Hulu, you can watch it. It's on YouTube.
And he's sitting there and he's beginning to shake and he just shatters the water glass in his hand. Oh, it's beautiful. But fired by a guy who sold meat through the mail.
That's got to have been such a knockdown for him. These people are titans. When you talk about, you know, titans of industry, he was one of them.
Oh, absolutely.
He's like a Rockefeller kind of, you know, the old school.
Right. If you're the CEO of Exxon, you're supposed to be more powerful than the president of the United States.
Oh, you're the rock star of the corporate world.
You're a law unto yourself. So Secretary of State was kind of a demotion. And you remember the hagiography where we were presented for him when he was nominated about how, you know, kind of sleazy rice goes great with kind of sleazy chicken, had told Trump that he needed to nominate him for Secretary of State. He had no experience, but he had been working on the world stage, and we got this story about how he worked his way up through Exxon from the mail room, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And but at the end of the day, whether it's H.R. McMaster or James Mattis or Rexon Tillerson, they all agreed to work for a guy they knew was a human turd from jump.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That like I've said before, tigers don't change their stripes and neither do skunks. But the thing with H.R. McMaster that got me was that McMaster was celebrated for his doctoral dissertation, which he then turned into a book, which everybody in the officer class of the United States military and all over the Pentagon now has to read, called Dereliction of Duty. And in Dereliction of Duty, McMaster argues that the country was let down by its military top brass, who didn't speak truth to power and didn't challenge people like LBJ and Nixon in regard to Vietnam. And
God.
And then to go to work for this guy?
Cue up the Alanis Morissette irony sound bit, man. Jesus.
Yeah, no kidding. But the thing is, the other part of Dereliction of Duty is that it is predicated on a hypothesis that Vietnam was a winnable war, which is about the dumbest goddamn...
Do I laugh now, Bob?
You can cackle like a hen laying eggs. I mean, you had skin in the game, right?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, he believed Vietnam could have been won. That the NVA and the Viet Cong could have been subdued, and the whole of the country could have been turned into a democratic wonderland. And so anybody who hatches cockamamie theories like that, his judgment, at least in my book, is suspect from the get-go. But again, the thing is, here's this man of honor, man of courage, man of military dignity. And he went to work of his own volition. Nobody coerced him. He was under no duress. There was no gun to his head. He went to work for a turd on two legs. Because, granted, we are very much a partisan community here, but is there any doubt? I mean, is there any redeeming human virtue whatsoever to Donald J. Trump? I mean, this is the kind of thing that the ancient Greeks used to get all liquored up and have symposia about. You know, and again, Diogenes walking around looking for the one honest man. Is there anything you can say about Donald J. Trump that is fundamentally good and is not completely overshadowed, drowned out, and outweighed by something that is manifestly awful about him? For instance, to go out and beat Godwin's law to death, the old response is, well, you know, Hitler liked dogs. This fucker doesn't even like dogs.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if he trotted a horse through the Senate.
Good old Incitatus.
Then Pence has a gay rabbit, according to John Oliver.
Oh, God, that was a hilarious thing.
Gay rabbit? Oh, jeez.
Yeah,
you can buy the book. You can buy the book. It's online.
Marlon Bundo.
Oh, jeez. Oh, man.
It's sold out, but they're printing more copies.
It'll well, and it was in response to Mrs. Mother Pence. I think he calls her Mother, doesn't he?
Mother, yeah.
And, just like Reagan called Nancy Mommy. Mother Pence wrote a book and illustrated it or whatever about a day in the life of Bundo, the vice president's bunny. And
people
to,
are crazy.
You know, just to tweak him, John Oliver's bunch wrote a book about Bundo, beat him to the presses with it, and it turned into a love story about two male bunnies who fall in love and get married. And it's a children's book. There's nothing weird or dirty or anything. It's just it's a children's book. And you know that goddamn miserable hypocrite Pence had to be just, you know, seething over it.
Go ahead. If they're not plotting or planning on ways to take people like John Oliver and Bill Morrow and even to a larger extent, all the progressive talkers that bring up poignant points down, you know?
Oh, there's an enemies list. Make no mistake.
Do you think you're on it, Bob?
Nah, I'm too small. I'm small potatoes.
Well, don't undersell yourself.
Yeah, but you keep sending notes to the president.
Well, I mean, you can't just leave those things hanging up above the rim when it's easy like that.
When they send you that big hanging curveball right over the middle of the
hell are you? You know, it's like when they asked Ted Williams. They said, you know, the rest of us see a pitch coming at us, and it looks like a BB. What's it look like to you, Ted? And he said, cantaloupe. You know, some things just, you know, oh, I don't think that one's going to be playable. And I admit, it's just kind of fun to tweet at the little bastard. He never reads them, but apparently he's been stopped from blocking people on Twitter because it would arguably be an impeachable offense, and he's blocked a bunch of people.
Yeah, one of many.
He's using Twitter as a form of communication, and that's by law. Those have to be retained. Has to be an open line of communication.
That would be hilarious if he managed to get impeached for
Twitter.
Yeah,
Twitter.
But by the same token, I had a story in the stack for this evening.
Please.
It's sad when this stuff, you know, gets acknowledged. But I think it was Bob Corker who said, "Look, let's not kid ourselves. The Republican Congress is not going to stand up to him. You know, they're kind of hell-bent on making a truth out of the fact that he could do what he said and shoot people in the middle of Fifth Avenue and not lose a vote." There it is. Yeah,
I caught that.
Yeah, Bob, let me see if we got audio here. Well, what they're reporting from Ring of Fire is that Republican Senator Bob Corker accidentally admitted why members of his party refused to stand up to Donald Trump this week. GOP voters don't care about issues now. They only want tribal loyalty to Trump.
It's the Klan.
Well, I'm of the opinion it's these Grover Norquist wet dream, and they're not going to let that go. They've been wanting this for so long, and they finally got it, no matter how crazy he is, no matter how self-evident that it is that he's insane, they refuse to let it go. And it's almost treasonous, their behavior. I'm curious, is anybody going to watch the Stormy Daniels interview this Sunday?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
I don't get CBS, so I can't. But
talk about a guilty pleasure. Jeez.
Yeah, well, I was watching CNN this morning, and basically the whole 8 o'clock hour was devoted to, you know, Karen McDougal, you know, and I swear she had something happen to her, like some kind of a mini stroke or something, because her like mouth just is like kind of misshapen. It's just not even, you know, when she talks. It's really kind of weird, you know. Maybe some bad plastic surgery. I don't know, but you know, and then her left eyebrow tends to like blink different from her right, you know. So
it could
like,
be Bell's palsy syndrome, but that usually
no. Passes. Maybe that's it. That could be. Yeah, it could be Bell's palsy because her lip was also not like level, you know, kind of like one side looked like it was higher than the other. Yeah, I bet she has had Bell's palsy or something. But no, I'm definitely going to watch the Stormy interview. I tape it. I tape 60 minutes. So I'll just.
Well, being a lawyer, you can break it down and articulate it and give us some good feedback next week. Give us your take on it. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, maybe. Well, you guys, you were talking earlier, speaking of feedback, you were talking earlier this week about Richard Simmons and what kind of remedies he might have. I did a little looking into it, and his attorneys have filed an appeal of the judge's decision. So,
well, but is it an appeal of the overall decision, or is it an appeal of the attorney's fee decision?
Well, I think the decision, you know, the action, I don't think concluded until the attorney's fee issue was resolved. Okay, so I think there is an appeal. I know there's an appeal on the merits of the case, and there, you know, there might not need to be a separate appeal as to the attorney's fees. Maybe they'll do two appeals, but generally you don't, you know, your right to appeal doesn't accrue until there's been a final order issued in the case, which essentially disposes of all aspects of the case. That's the idea anyway. So, yeah, I don't really know, you know, as far as the appeal, you know, the judges, you know, Bob, but I mean, essentially the judge made the decision. He kept it from the jury. It must have been on a summary judgment.
Well, that was the one thing that interested me. Was it on a 12B6 or a summary judgment? I mean, yeah, it would have to be one or the two. But if there's, it seems to me like the judge created a question of material fact when he said this court finds that this court will not validate the idea that it is shameful to be outed as transgender.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that it is either, but he was speaking for all intents and purposes he was speaking ex cathedra for everybody in at least, you know, his bailiwick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he basically created a new rule of law. And because of that, I think, you know, legal issues are much more susceptible to being successfully appealed, you know, ruling on a legal issue. So if he's saying as a matter of law, there can be no, you know, defamation in the case of... you know, falsely accusing somebody of being transgender, okay, or there can be no damages. You know, I think that seems to be kind of a shaky, you know, decision, at least from my perspective.
But he
know?
Will be, and I take it there is an intermediate court of civil appeals in California.
Yeah, it's the California court. It'd be a California court of appeal, and then you can go to the California Supreme Court as well after that. And unlike the U.S. Supreme Court, I think you can appeal to the, well, I guess you can still appeal to the Supreme Court as of right. I guess the California court can also decline to take cases as well, you know? But I think they take a lot more cases than the U.S. Supreme Court does.
And but the rule of law still obtains that the ruling of the trial court is afforded great deference
as to specific factual findings. Yes, as to questions of law, it's just reviewed like you know, like it's called de novo, which means as of new, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not given any special deference. And to the extent he's created a rule of law, from what I can see, that look, you know, if you're falsely accused of being transgender, by definition, that can't be defamation. I think he's wrong, you know, or you can't be libeled or whatever.
Well,
it was.
And isn't the issue of whether something is, and I'm just using the commonly accepted term, isn't the issue of whether something is actual malice? When you get right down to it, isn't that a jury question?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it kind of has to be a jury question.
Yeah, and so is the issue as to whether, you know, a particular statement was libelous, you know? So I think this judge is going to get reversed. The more I talk about it, the more I'm convinced he's going to get reversed.
And as far as the standard concerns is concerned, if it's a summary judgment, you know, under New York Times versus Sullivan and on down to Falwell v. Hustler,
yeah.
The finding has to be that there is no genuine issue of material law or fact. So
well,
if you've got an
issue
of
material fact,
if you've got
a genuine issue of material fact, okay,
under,
and they're entitled to judgment as a matter of law as a result due to that. Okay. So basically, for purposes of summary judgment, you know, the allegations of the plaintiff are essentially presumed to be true. Maybe I'm getting confused with motions to dismiss there, but, there's...
I just remember the stuff I memorized a very, very long time ago.
Yeah.
Because the way you resist a motion for summary judgment is to simply find a material, you know, you've got to have an issue, it's got to be material, and it's got to be a fact, and... Boom, done.
It's disputed. It's a disputed issue of fact. Yeah, that's the idea. If it's an issue of law that the judge rules on, then, you know, no judge's opinion is better than any other judge's opinion as to a matter of law. And for that reason, there is no deference given to a trial judge's view as to what the law is. So we'll see what happens. I mean, I think... you know,
it struck me as being one of those classic cases that you hear about on the first day of the first semester, the first day of the first week of the first semester of law school, where some old guy with a lot of hair growing out of his ears says, "Hard cases make bad law." And
Rick Sailorchick in the chat room wants me to ask you, are we paying for Donnie's legal fees?
The U.S. taxpayers. That's a good question. I don't think so, because Bill Clinton went into extreme debt dealing with his legal fees, you know, during the Whitewater investigation and, you know, the Cleanest Gate and so forth, you know. So I... don't think so. I don't think we are paying for his legal fees. I think to the extent that it's like White House counsel, yeah, that's a taxpayer funded position. But John Dowd, for example, who has left the team after issuing a statement criticizing Mueller, I'm sure at Trump's urging, I don't think his legal fees are getting paid by the taxpayers. I can't imagine they would be. You know, sometimes there's a, you know, if it can be shown that, that actions for which the president's being investigated were, you know, within the course and scope of his duties as president, then, you know, you get,
well, and there's a big difference between White House counsel, who is paid by the taxpayer,
right,
and personal defense counsel.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think Trump's got a pony that pony up funds for that.
Yeah, he's going to stiff him. He stiffs everybody else.
Exactly. All I can say is I hope that for their own good and their law firm's own good, they got a big fat retainer, you know.
And, up front. But as I pointed out the I think last night, a lawyer cannot suborn perjury.
No. absolutely not.
And the crux of this thing came to being over the fact that Mueller kept telling him, look, if you talk, I mean, not Mueller, but Dowd kept telling Trump, look, if you talk to Mueller, you're going to get impeached or indicted or something because you're going to lie.
That's true. Yeah.
And if I know you're going to lie, and I sit there while you lie, then it's my ass.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's bye-bye law license stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you just can't sit there silently while you know your client is lying. I mean, you can, you know, what you would do, I think, Bob, is you would say, hey, Mr. Mueller, we need to take a break here. And then you go outside of the room and read Donnie the Riot Act.
Well, it's not even, I mean, I remember being specific, one of the few practical things they taught us in law school about how to practice was what to do when your client starts lying on the stand and you know it's a lie.
Yeah.
Because that's when you get it. Your Honor, may I approach?
That's what all that's about.
And you walk up and it's all peas and carrots, carrots and peas, peas and carrots, carrots and peas, carrots and peas, peas and carrots. And you know, and hands over microphones and all of that shit. And you look at the judge and you can't breach confidence.
Yeah.
You know, you're in a spot.
Mm-hmm.
And but it, you know, the way it was taught to us is everybody understands the coded language here. If you look at the judge and say, Your Honor, based upon stuff I just heard, I move this court instantaneously to give me leave to relieve me as counsel because I got to go because I'm going shit. And the judge will look at you and go, ah, Bach, it's highly significant. And then whack, we're going to take a recess. Counsel is, you know, the learned counsel is relieved from any further representation of this of this client. We'll be back in the morning.
Yeah.
Try the veal.
Hey, let me ask you a question. Could that be, they were on the news last night, and they even had the guy that was the lawyer for Bin Laden's driver, and he said he wouldn't take Trump on as a client. Could that be why Trump is having such a hard time finding quality representation?
Yeah, there's two reasons. There's basically two reasons. You have absolutely no client control with a client like Trump because he's not gonna take your advice. He's gonna do whatever the fuck he wants to do, number one. And number two, the guy is a pathological liar. He wouldn't know, you know, the truth if it, like, you know, whacked him upside the head 50 times.
And right, and you're really in a mess because on the one hand, if you're John Dowd and you say, well, goodbye, Donnie, go in and talk to Mueller, I'll be sitting right out here, you're malpracticing because you're not representing your client. You're hanging your client out to dry. On the other hand, it's Bob fucking Mueller, and he's the special prosecutor, and he's got all that 18 U.S.C., what is it, 1001?
False statement to a federal official.
And if you're sitting there while he's lying his ass off, then the next thing you know, Mueller's going to be talking to the grand jury about you. I mean, it is a lawyer's Kobayashi Maru. There's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. And you're fucked.
Yeah, you are. Actually, it's, I would say, Bob, that it's an even thornier issue if you're in court and your client's on the stand, lying on the stand. Okay.
Well, sure it is because he's under oath. But he's gonna. Yeah. But the thing is, if it's not. Let's say the situation is different, and you know you've just got a, you know, everyday street value client, and you're sitting there, and you're talking to a detective.
Right.
Well, there's some statute out there about giving false information, blah blah blah. But in that situation, a lawyer is not at hazard.
Right.
But Mueller is not some detective.
No.
Mueller is a constitutionally duly appointed agent of the Department of Justice.
You
you can find plenty of case law out there that says that the Department of Justice, especially in the lawyer realm, you know this, you worked for him, is a quasi-judicial branch. Not fully judicial, but quasi-judicial. So that, you know, I mean, that's why state attorneys generals can issue official legal opinions, and they have a binding effect until such time as a judge overturns them. And so consequently, Dowd had no choice. You know, he threatened to quit earlier if Trump tried to fire Mueller.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this was that. This was the insistence of Trump that he was going to, you know, because remember, he thinks he's smarter than everybody.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And what's so funny is when he, what was it, a week or so ago when he flew out to San Diego and he said, yeah, believe me, you don't want to be on the wrong end of a dedicated Marine who's committed to completing his task. And I heard that clip and I was like, you mean Mueller?
Yeah, right, exactly. You know, I think what Dowd would have had to have done, let's say Donnie's being interviewed by Mueller and he starts to like make false statements, okay? What Dowd would have to do, I mean, ethically, what he should do in that situation is call for a timeout.
Timeout. Yeah.
Yeah. Read Donnie the Riot Act. Okay. You know, take a break and then tell Donnie, look, you've got to amend your prior statement. Otherwise I'm out of here as your attorney. That would be the safest thing for Dowd to do in that situation.
If he stuck around long enough to get his ass slung out over the fire. But he's been practicing in D.C. for a while, which is its own very specific sort of gator farm, mm-hmm. and he was unwilling to get into the swing.
Right.
You know, let Jay Sekulow go do that.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Let this
right,
DeGeneva guy go do that.
What a joke he is, DeGeneva. Oh, my God. I mean, we're talking like legal commentators. The guy hasn't practiced law in how many years? Although I guess he does represent some witnesses. There's talk now that, you know, that he might be conflicted out, because I think maybe it's his wife that represents witnesses, but they have the same firm, I think. It's like DeGeneva and Tenzing or whatever is the firm.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And they're both like on the cable all the time, or at least they used to be. I used to watch them in the 90s when they were on CNN.
I just got a question in from Darlene in Connecticut. But why, Darlene asks, it's clear to us that Trump is toxic and dangerous to one's reputation and career, and that not to mention one's freedom, and that he'll throw you under the bus without a second thought. But Trump still finds people willing to take up the torch for him. How? Why are the McMasters and the Tillersons missing what is so blatantly obvious to us?
Well, probably because they're Republicans, Bob.
Power and money.
Yeah, that too.
And power. Who said that power is the greatest aphrodisiac?
Henry Kissinger, I think.
And they want to get and you know, to a certain extent, I think there's also the matter of people who are also who particularly are impressed with their own abilities. And have had people whispering what, you know, awesome freaking super geniuses they are in their ear for, you know, decades. Look, it's Paul Hindenburg when the little guy with the chaplain mustache got elected. Paul von Hindenburg said, I will handle this Hitler. How'd that work out, Paul?
Well, he didn't live long enough to really be able to handle him, right?
Precisely, but anybody who says I think I can handle Trump can't.
Yeah,
because
that's probably why Dershowitz hadn't stepped up to the plate, even though he's on Fox News once a week, running his mouth defending him.
Well, you know
that's safe.
He's cashing the check.
I wonder if the spirochetes have gotten to Dershowitz's brain as well. Maybe
well,
it's
speaking of which, I got a little cowbell here for Earther, who says subject line Trump's good deed. Well, he did adopt and house those homeless little spirochetes, Brother Bob. So there's that. But in something resembling a serious attempt to answer Darlene's question, which was asked seriously, why are the McMasters and Tillersons missing what is so blatantly obvious to us? You know, there haven't been a lot of national security advisors. There haven't been a lot of chiefs of staff. There haven't been a lot of secretaries of state. I mean, my God, if you're a secretary of state, you are in a line that begins with James Madison, okay? There's a lot of prestige and dignity that goes with that. And there was also, if you were to draw up the Venn diagram, there's some overlap between Trump and Tillerson. There's overlap between Madison and Trump. There's overlap between Kelly and Trump and overlap between McMaster and Trump. But what they fail to take into account, because of the fact that they are wealthy, because of the fact that they are powerful, because of the fact that they are not in the position of having anybody ever tell them no, is that whatever overlap there may be, wherever the overlap isn't, Trump's going to win. And to a certain extent, that's the way it is with the presidency generally. The buck stops here, said Harry Truman. But that's not Trump. It's just that the buck never stops at Trump. Trump's never responsible for anything. I mean, look, the market lost something around 1,500 freaking points this week when the brilliant goddamn Republicans and corporate titans of the universe figured out that their tax cut wasn't going to cover the amount that they were going to lose their fucking shirts with all this trade nonsense. And so the market took a big screaming dump and is way south of 24,000 now. And so, lo and behold, while he was out there ballyhooing and crowing when it was going up, 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 suddenly he's as silent as a graven image when it comes to the fact that he's tanking it. Mm-hmm. If you're responsible for it going up, you're responsible for it going down. That's why if you're a smart president, you kind of keep your mouth shut about the stock market.
Obama did, for sure.
But in Trump's case, what these guys didn't understand is that he's just gonna do. He's a. If sick good doctor, the cigar had was talking to us about it, he might say, "Listen, this is Trump. There is no ego. There is no super ego. There is nothing but id." Five years from now, he will be painting. He will be painting paintings with his own feces.
Oh jeez! Oh god! Hey, got an update for you, Bob.
Yeah.
West Virginia is up 50-47. Second half.
Well, we're about a minute and change away from me. A minute and 10 seconds away from me getting to watch. But Bob,
can I make one more comment?
Oh yeah, please.
Mighty Mike is listening.
Oh,
and he has a comment that I think is worthy of a cowbell. Let me just kind of phrase it here. He's come up with an explanation as to the deal with McDougal's face, why her affectation is a little bit off.
Yeah.
It's because she had sex with Trump 50 times. Once is probably quite enough for that to happen to you. Wow.
Occam's razor. Sometimes the simplest answer is most likely the correct one.
Right in front of you.
Or, yeah, Occam's loading dose with penicillin, as the case may be, whatever.
Oh, jeez.
y'all have been great this evening. I've enjoyed it immensely. Note coming in from Clarence Lebowski defense. He needs a lawyer to say, "Shut the fuck up, Donnie." Yeah. Well, he's needed that since, forever. Agent Fred, don't take this the wrong way. This is not intended in any, no, this is a literary allusion. Not I-L-L-U-S-I-O-N, Fred. A-L-L-U-S-I-O-N. There is a short story by Flannery O'Connor called A Good Man Is Hard to Find. And in it, there is this mouthy grandma who gets, it's a car trip with mama and daddy and the two little obnoxious, oh Jesus, they're obnoxious kids, and grandma who is waxing prolifically about the good old days down on the plantation. And she hectors her son until he finally takes this dirt road that she says leads to where the old plantation was. And, I mean, Flannery O'Connor wrote some gothic shit. Meanwhile, there's on the radio a word that there is an escaped convict on the loose called the Misfit. And, of course, naturally, spoiler, I mean, the story's only been out for like 60 years, something like that. So eventually the car breaks down on the old dirt road, and along comes this guy, and we all know it's the Misfit. And eventually he blows the brains out of Mama and Daddy and the two obnoxious little kids, and you are not the least bit surprised or disturbed by it, okay? And then there's Granny, who's the whole problem, and she just keeps looking at him and saying, well, you seem like such a nice little Christian boy. I can't imagine you would hurt a fine grandmother lady like me. And of course he blows her brains out and dumps her in the ditch too, because he's the Misfit. And at the end of it, there's this line, and from the first time he looks up, and I can't remember it precisely. And he says something like, you know, it's a shame there's so much evil in this world. She might have been a pretty good woman if there had been somebody there to kill her every day of her life. Now, again, a woman wrote this. There's no Me Too in all of this. It's just literature. But, you know, maybe if Donald J. Trump in his formative years had somebody to guide him in some direction other than that direction in which his id has led him every second of every minute of every hour of every day of every week of every month of every year of his existence, he might have been a different human being. His own parents shipped him off to that particular military academy in New York because it was the place where if you were wealthy, you shipped your awful, 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 horrible, terrible, no good, rotten, very bad children when you just couldn't stand them anymore and you were wealthy enough to keep them out of juvenile hall. And so, you know, I guess that's something in the way of an answer to the question, isn't it? He's never had anybody to check his worst impulses. And we all have to have those people in our lives because, you know, you never learn from getting stuff right. Little clever primates that we are, we learn from making mistakes. I mean, that's in the nature of work, isn't it? So, you know, again, there's nothing to worry about, Agent Fred. This is just by way of analogy and allusion and trying to sort out things. But we are where we are, arguably, because of some really horrible parenting. You know, going back to his mother, Mary, who at one point in time in the 90s said of her own son, what kind of monster have we unleashed on this world? So, you know.
Very prescient, actually, Bob, that comment. You know?
Yeah, she knew.
Meanwhile,
Charlie in Tennistan says, stay tuned for next week's Donald's Night of the Long Knives. Continued. Yeah, any idea that anybody was going to lead a 25th Amendment charge is pretty, you know, that ship has sailed. because this war cabinet that's being talked about, it's not a war cabinet, it's a yes cabinet. And we'll be lucky if he doesn't try to steal the silver. One last thing before we go, though, just in the way of, you know, cheesy ass gossip. Because the Never Again Parkland young people and their allies are going to be marching in D.C. this week, or tomorrow rather. Well. He bailed out and headed for Mar-a-Lago today. Here's the thing, though. Melanoma was said to be going with him. Melanoma did not accompany him onto the aircraft. CBS News White House correspondent Mark Knoller said that Trump walked from the Oval Office to Marine One by himself. The Washington Post's Dave Nakamura, on the other hand, noted that when it was time for him to get on Air Force One, he said, looks like Trump used the non-ceremonial below-belly stairs to board Air Force One again. He did that a week or two ago. I almost never saw Obama do it. Wonder what that's about. And remember, he's terrified of stairs. His equilibrium is affected. That's why he held on to Theresa May all those months ago like grim death. He's horrified of falling down because he's falling apart.
But Melanoma must be fuming after these latest interviews, the McDougal and now coming up Stormy. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'd hate to be in that household with her. You know? If I was her husband, you know? Jeez.
So, you know, there's that. Anyway, I guess we'll get out of here. Thank you very kindly to Ralps for jumping in with the Trash Fitzwalker Stand Challenge, met for another month. And thanks, everybody, who helped us meet the fundraising goal for the month of March. We'll just ride on through and thank our subscribers every evening, and we'll have fundraising free radio. And won't that be awesome? Thanks to all of you for participating. Thanks, Rick. And thanks, Steve from Georgia Stan. And thanks, Larry in Berkeley. Thanks, VT Blom. Thanks, of course, always go out to Sparky for moderating the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff generally. Thanks to Sparky and Steve for their moderating skills and duties over the course of the week. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to thank you very kindly to Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thanks to John Fox in Australia, to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Thanks to all of you who share in your precious finite time in helping to keep this program on the air. And thanks for your input, and thanks for just being part of our little running and ongoing community. Thank you all so very, very much. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later. Oh, yeah. Let's go, Mountaineers.